This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Nippy out. Or Clark Griswold said in Christmas Vacation, nipply out. Here on a beautiful fall morning in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on the Big Show. Thank you for joining us. Hump day, short work week, Wednesday. Lots to talk about today. We're going to get into the Banjo Bowl. Of course, the Bombers and the Riders and the rematch this Sunday afternoon at sold out IGF, 2 p.m. Minook Dentra Blue Bomber game day reminder starts at high noon on Saturday. Ezekiel Elliott, the NFL. We're going to make some AFC picks today. Winnipeg Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff on the NHL Network on Sirius XM yesterday. We'll get some of those comments. We have your Hockey Nights in Vegas qualifiers, two of them, back-to-back hours in the next two after this one. NHL News and Notes. Ian Mendez, Jared Clinton, Milt Stegall, and Gus Katsaros all going to join us, and then we're going to throw it all over to you on the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9 o'clock for one full hour. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Doing pretty well today. Like you say, you open that door in the morning, it's like, ooh, baby. Wakes you up in a hurry. Ugh. And I got to give just a shout-out to everybody who's playing senior men's or women's sports in this city. I was out in the pitch last night with a Division II team I play for. We're at Buehler Park, a beautiful night. The game gets a little bit – this is soccer. Game gets a little bit rough near the end. There's a red card doled out and a few yellows. And then near the end of the game, the ref is really getting threatened, something fierce, by the team that we're playing against.
Really?
And there's a guy on their sideline. He's their coach. He's standing there with a dog that's a big, intimidating dog. It looked like a pit bull mix or something like that. And he's threatening the ref. And the dog, like, he's got the dog on a leash, and he's utilizing the dog in a way that's intimidating. And I'm playing left back, so I'm, like, far away from him, the opposite side, but come over and, you know, and this idiot is telling me that it's none of my business. And he's sitting there threatening the ref. And there's, you know, something breaks out in the field, and the ref is noticeably affected by this. Just a reminder for all the idiots out there that challenge refs like that, I don't care what your sport you're talking about, but get a life with that first of all. And then, you know, whether it's – that could be your own teammate or your own coach. You got to step in your own team. You know, whoever the good men and women are that are a part of that team, you go take care of that individual on your own team so that the other team doesn't have to get involved basically and things of that nature. But you know, waiting until the ref – till they all left so the ref felt safe and all the rest of it. So shout out to all the refs out there and to all you idiots that berate refs or intimidate or threaten and all the rest of it. I think that – soccer leagues, hockey leagues, whatever league that you're playing, there should be some real serious consequences, like gone for the half a season maybe for the first offense and gone for a full season second, something even more than that maybe. Just any time a ref is threatened, that should be something severe, severely punitive should be attached to that.
That still goes on, eh?
It was ridiculous, yeah. Man. And this dog, like the guy was really using the dog. Right, and is standing there and saying some just brutal things to the ref, threatening him, his well-being, and using the dog as a – it was just ridiculous, man.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And, you know, sports does a lot of good, but it also brings out the worst in people a lot of the times too. And I think a lot of people forget that, you know, senior or whatever kind of minor thing is not the show. You know, you're not out here making millions of dollars. You're out here playing with people who have jobs and families, and you're gonna threaten and hurt and harm someone because of a soccer game or a hockey game. Like it is ridiculous and it's sad and hopefully some kind of major punishment goes down on that team. And really, I kind of jokingly say I have a distaste for referees, but to go to the extent of trying to physically harm or even mentally harm someone, you're just a loser at that point. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah, and my favorite line in any senior men's sports league is telling anyone, we both got to go to work the next day. Like, we both have lives. We both have – it's just not worth it. Wow, that's disappointing to hear. And maybe that's a segue into what we're going to first talk about, because I didn't bring this up with you gentlemen yesterday, but the Labor Day Classic was its usual feverish pitch, maybe even more so given the records of the teams and how well they were both doing. And after the game, Daron Carter, the Riders receiver, whom I know we all know and find entertaining, and one of the top players in the league at that position, I would say, has probably arguably one of, or if not the catch of the year. There are so many this year. Claimed to be having been spat on by a Bomber fan after the game.
I don't doubt it whatsoever. You know, you mix sort of the fever of these types of rivalry games and then throwing a bunch of liquid courage or liquid stupidity and things like that can happen. On more than one occasion in Hamilton, there were times when people were getting, and kids, even kids, like I'm talking 6 years old, were leaning over the old Ivor Wynne Stadium. They used to have sort of a, like the fans are right over top you there. And like if you put your back up against the wall, that's kind of the way it was. And they would lean over this barrier that was there and say things or spit things and stuff. And there was more than 1 year that people would be leaning over that trying to spit on guys and stuff. So it's
to spit on them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me at all. It's definitely unfortunate. And, you know, but when that story came out, I received 8 or 10 stories to totally counter it, right? And it's the same. I think the same things. It doesn't matter what stadium or arena you go to, and now we're talking safe house. So I'll just stick to the stadium scene sort of thing. But whether you're in the at Mosaic, or this weekend in Banjo Bowl, there's going to be something that happens in the Banjo Bowl that's unfortunate. It's probably like one thing. I don't know what it's going to be, but there's always seems to be 1, 2, 3 sort of things when you get 30,000+ people there. Unfortunate occurrences where the vast majority, like 98-99% of the people there, have real sound understanding of the friendly nature of the rivalry and just a level of kindness and respect to always maintain between the two provinces when you're cheering for your teams. And I had all kinds of people texting me and communicating with me about how they were treated with great respect and had all kinds of fun with the people in Saskatchewan and all the rest of it. So I guess the bottom line is just please keep it friendly, keep it decent. And even the trying to rip off Gaynor's head thing, I don't like that at all, man. Like, don't – that's a mascot. You got to respect that a little bit. And there's a line, and I think trying to pull Gaynor's head off is over the line, and certainly spitting and that sort of thing doesn't represent the blue and gold very well.
Well, that's the other thing we were – I was going to bring up too, that along with Daron Carter claiming to have been spat on, and I'm with you. I believe him. I don't know why you would say this if it didn't actually happen. Was a fan trying to, as Gaynor, the Gopher, was going around the outside of the field at the stadium, a Bomber fan tried to reach over and take his head off. And he's a mascot, so...
And that's a tough gig, right? Those guys, the guys and gals that do that job, like, they have a lot of fun, and but that's a tough gig, man. Someone's just trying to make an honest living and honestly trying to get their own crowd pumped up and having fun. There's always a fun element. Leave the mascots alone.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the headline "Bombers fans treated well in Saskatchewan" doesn't really have a juicy kind of a lead into that one, and it's not going to compel you to read it. But yeah, there's in anything, there's always a couple of idiots in the bunch, right? Like it doesn't like any
people together.
Yeah, like someone's going to be a moron, which is what this person and to me, spitting on someone is just like that the ultimate low act you can do to another human being, and you know, wouldn't do it in person, right? You wouldn't treat anybody that way face to face, but more than likely enough, you get a bunch of liquor pumped into you, you get put into an atmosphere like that, and you do something that you never would, I would hope at least, you never would do sober and in public. So, yeah, like I don't think it's indicative of the Bombers fan base or anything like that. I've always found at these things, even with the rivalry, that I can't remember ever being treated super poorly before.
Yeah.
Like I maybe I'm totally off base on this, but I've always felt like it's been somewhat of a kind of a friendly rivalry.
Absolutely.
And respective.
Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe people certainly have different experiences in this thing, but I've always enjoyed the rivalry. Like, it's fun. Like, when I went to, I've been to a couple Flyers Penguins game. That is not fun. Like, that is not a fun buddy buddy brother rivalry. There is so much anger and hatred and animosity there that you don't even want to go to the opposing barn sort of thing, because you know you're going to get into a fight. Yeah. Essentially, it feels like whenever I go to a Bombers Riders game that it's kind of like almost a family thing, right? Where yeah. you're if you're you and your brother or you and your sister or whatever sibling or whatever parent or
there's
uncle.
There's a joke there, but yeah.
Yeah, but I like either way. Like if you guys have different teams and you kind of go at it head to head, maybe things get a little bit heated, but like nothing physical or violent. Like that's kind of what it feels like to me.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. We're talking about Riders receiver Daron Carter saying he was spat on by a Bomber fan during or after the Labor Day Classic in Regina, and another Winnipeg Blue Bomber fan trying to take the head off a Gainer the Gopher. And before you start tweeting, and we're going to open the Boston Pizza fan line on this as well, we understand that it doesn't paint the picture for the whole fan base. But I guess what we're just discussing is these things are always, and I'm sure that, and maybe I'm wrong, but 80-90% of the time when you wake up the next morning and you're the culprit, you probably feel like you did, like, just keep that in mind what you're doing. I've seen it all. Like, I'm a Bears fan. I watch GIFs on Twitter of a Bears fan walking into the game against Jacksonville last year, and this guy's giving it to three Jacksonville fans, and they're literally saying, "What? Like, what is your problem?" Mm-hmm. And giving her your quarterback this, blah, 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 and I should just beat the hell out of you right now, blah, blah. And it got to an altercation where I hate to say this because I never want to see it happen. The Bears fan got beat up because he's just being abusive to these guys that are like, "Hey, if you want to go, let's go." And there's about 1,000 Bears fans around him not helping him because this guy was so obnoxious and trying to, you know, get at these guys for no reason. Just enjoy the game. Enjoy the rivalry. That's what I always liked about rivalries. Like you said, the Pens and the Penguins, like, do you not enjoy that more than you do, like, literally detest or want physical harm to another fan? So it's, as Troy was saying about the officials as well, I couldn't agree more. Like, enjoy it, but don't go over the line. And when you're spitting on somebody, we all know how that's the lowest thing I think you can do to somebody. Oh, it's the most cowardly.
There's way worse.
Well,
but yeah,
without actually physically,
yeah. It's a real, yeah, Mickey Mouse. Sort of thing to do, yeah.
Harming somebody for sure. So it's interesting. And IGF is sold out, the Banjo Bowl, this Saturday. And
the question to me is, though, I know the sellout, and it happened a while ago, but what's the breakdown? What's the percentage? How many green and white? You know, like that's – I know we were sold out first, but that could have meant that more Saskatchewan Rough Rider fans were buying tickets than Bomber fans were buying Mosaic tickets. Like, I really wonder – because there's always a pile of green and white.
Too many,
in there.
Yeah.
Is it going to be 2,000? Is it going to be 5,000? There'll be a bunch of them.
Did the Labor Day Classic sell out?
That I don't know for sure.
Because I was on with a guy on Twitter, and he kept saying, those are resales. And I understand how they work. The team will announce it. And then he, after about 20 minutes looking into the tickets, and this was probably Wednesday or Thursday, when the Bombers announced it, the Banjo Bowl was sold out. He said, no, you're right. There's the odd $300 ticket still for sale from the – so it wasn't a sellout. So that's why I'm wondering how many – there will be Rider fans here, no doubt. Yeah. There'll be Rider fans who live in this city there, not just traveling. But when the old Labor Day Classic didn't sell out, I'm wondering just how many Bomber fans. But there'll be a contingent for sure. And I want to – let's be honest. How many Bomber fans made the trip this week to the Labor Day Classic? It felt like there was more there than normal. The stadium had a lot of Bomber fans in it.
And I think, you know, if you've been to a Labor Day game before, if you've never been but wanted to go to the first one at the new Mosaic was that much more of a draw, right? So, yeah, there was a bunch of blue and gold jerseys there, and this is just it's awesome. Keep the numbers high. It's great for each organization because it should be basically a guaranteed sellout for one of the 9 games during the course of the regular season. But always, like we were all touching on, a great, typically friendly rivalry, one of the very best that this country has to offer.
No Cam Marshall, no former Bison and Winnipegger Nick Dembski for the Riders. They are injured and will not play in the Banjo Bowl. That opens the door for our friend Keenan LaFrance, former Bison, a Grey Cup winner with the Ottawa Redblacks last year. He'll return home and make his first start at running back. We'll delve into the lineups much more as the week wears on for the Banjo Bowl this Saturday, 2 o'clock at IGF. We'll hear from Kevin Cheveldayoff at the bottom of the hour, but up next, Ezekiel Elliott's suspension is upheld. We'll discuss that on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
TSN1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team celebrity. September 22nd and 23rd, the money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, and state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, simply visit TSN1290.ca. The Big Show, Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you, 21 minutes past the hour. A little nippy out today, but it is supposed to be a high of 19, and that, once again, 0% chance of precipitation today. 0% chance, but only a high of 19 today. And as we said, a little chilly out. We'll keep you up to date in traffic and weather throughout the program today. Kevin Cheveldayoff, we're here from some of his interview and some of his thoughts on his team from the NHL Network interview he did yesterday on Sirius XM at the bottom of the hour. Right now, gentlemen, the news came out, I guess, in the afternoon for all you doing fantasy drafts and for all you Cowboy fans out there and basically for football fans and people who care about domestic violence. Ezekiel Elliott's suspension was upheld the six games yesterday, but he will, because it was filed or it was not finalized, a 2.5-day appeal process. An arbitrator has ruled that the suspension will stand six games. He will get to play in week one, Sunday night versus the New York Giants, and then most likely we'll have to do the six games here. The PA is continuing to fight this. It could get even more ugly than it already is. But your thoughts so far on an arbitrator holding up the original decision by Roger Goodell in the National Football League?
And it's not that they're looking into whether or not domestic violence occurred. They're looking into the process of Roger Goodell in handing out and just ensuring that he went about his business on that side of the equation in a way that was acceptable as per the terms and the agreement between the PA and the league, so, which is what he's upholding here. The players are going to continually do this whenever they get suspensions. At some point in time, I suppose, or they'll never learn that they've entered into this agreement, and it's pretty much ironclad from all indications here that Roger Goodell has this level of power. And you know dang well that Ezekiel Elliott's going to continue to push this as long as he can, along with Jerry Jones. Like, the Dallas Cowboys have the best interest as well from a football perspective to drag this out in the courts as long as possible. I heard one thing, like, there's a couple guys that dragged it out 2 years in the courts, suspensions, and one of them ended up retiring before he ever had to serve a suspension. So that's what Ezekiel Elliott is going to do here, just drag it out as long as possible. It's kind of horse crap to me to watch. And same as people were so upset with Goodell with Brady and Deflategate and how long it lasted. Well, it lasted that long because Brady refused to accept the suspension. And the same sort of thing's going to happen with this here, that it just gets dragged out forever. And to me, it's a negative for Ezekiel Elliott in a lot of, like, it just makes it, we're reminded of what happened. That much more so, you got a guy like Jason Cole joining us saying, hey, I read through all the documentation here. It's ugly on both sides, the accuser's side and, mm-hmm. and Ezekiel Elliott. So he at the very least, played some fairly significant role in doing things that were, at the very least, that weren't acceptable to the NFL. And I just don't really understand people that think, and even his party, like his side saying a conspiracy and all those sorts of things. What in the hell kind of conspiracy or what interest would Roger Goodell have and the NFL in sitting down one of the star players of their league for 6 weeks unless they felt that it was warranted for his actions and all the rest of it? So the whole conspiracy thing really bothers me. The Goodell and the NFL don't benefit from a star missing 6 weeks at all.
Well, now the conspiracy theorists are saying that, you know, they dragged out this arbitration, or not arbitration, but this review of it so that he could play on Sunday night opening weekend.
There's something a little fishy. There's something a little fishy about Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys, you know, just kind of benefiting the league and making sure that their primetime, basically, mm-hmm. gem of a first week matchup gets you know, the allure of, oh, Ezekiel Elliott's playing because of the guy. There's something.
You know, Jerry Jones and Roger Goodell have had behind the door conversations somehow to manage all this.
That to me is, there's something ugly going on there. And this whole thing's just terrible. And like Troy said, if anyone's read the information here, it's just an ugly, ugly story. Like, there's no side that's going to come out good in any of this. And you just, like, if you're the NFL, you just want to stamp this one out right away. And I guess the legalities come into it here with the timelines and that sort of thing. I don't totally know how all that works, but it's just a sticky, ugly situation. And you just, I feel probably worse for the girl who has her name out now and her life is just completely turned upside down. And the NFL, like, they got the suspension right, but the way they went about it is... I just feel like they could have handled the lead up to this better. They got the ultimate result correct, but I don't know if the process was done in the best light.
Well, and part of the problem with the process is they've been screwing it up for so long that when they finally got it right, there's all this previous case that you can argue that what about this? What about this guy? When this guy did this, it was only this, and the precedents that's been set, but. It is ugly, and it is very bizarre to me that on Sunday night, with a guy with a 6-game suspension, somehow is going to play in the marquee matchup in week one of the NFL and then have to serve 6 games, and for week one isn't included. But we'll continue to follow this and, of course, get your opinions on it on the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9 o'clock. Up next, Kevin Chevel Dayoff's thoughts on the upcoming season on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The Assiniboine Park Conservancy and Manitoba Brewers Association present Brew at the Zoo Friday, September 15th at Assiniboine Park Zoo, showcasing the growing craft brewery industry in an after-hours adults-only zoo experience. Enjoy craft beer, sampling food, and live music courtesy of Winnipeg's The Proud Sons. For more information and to buy tickets, visit assiniboinepark.ca, 33 minutes past the hour on the opening hour of The Big Show, TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Weston, and Brandon Ruicki with you. We'll make some AFC picks in this hour as well. And, of course, the Royal Sports Power Hour coming up. And your chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. Your first one today on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Right now, though, Kevin Cheveldayoff, general manager of the Winnipeg Jets, of course, getting ready for the season, or probably is ready for the season. Training camp less than 2 weeks away now. And the Young Stars tournament this weekend in Penticton. I know he'll be out there. And we'll have all the games for you in extended coverage with our broadcast team on the Winnipeg Jets here at TSN 1290. However, Mr. Cheveldayoff was on the NHL Network on Sirius XM yesterday. Throughout the program today, we'll delve into some of his comments and questions, and it started with his thoughts on Steve Mason.
Well, Steve obviously is someone that has the experience. He's a bona fide number one. He's played that position for years. He's gone through a real growing process, and not unlike what Connor Hellebuyck is kind of going through right now. You know, he burst onto the scene, obviously winning the Calder Trophy, and had a lot of ups and downs and throughout the time. But he's matured, and the position of goaltender, a lot of it is talent, but a lot of it is that mental maturity on how to handle the everyday grind of being a number one goaltender in the National Hockey League. So we think, with the experience of Mason, with the up and coming, talent of Hellebuyck, that the two of them will mesh together and that we should have solid goaltending on any given night.
Your thoughts on his thoughts on Kevin Cheveldayoff's thoughts?
Was he on his knees with his hands together saying that? Like, I don't know if that's a statement or a prayer, but most certainly, hey, man, like, boy, how much weight of the expectation on what's going to go on between the pipes here, defensive things being improved, be damned or not, right? Like, it just, the goaltending for this team, boy, oh, boy, is there a... and just get average, right? Go sniff around a 915 or so team save percentage, and a lot of people thinking that all by itself will be enough to propel this team above the playoff line. It is likely to be the storyline going forward, and if a guy like Steve Mason can ride in here and deliver somewhere between a 915 and a 920, there will be statues of him erected after one season at the MTS Center. I hope everything comes to fruition here, and I'm really intrigued to see how the situation with Connor Hellebuyck is managed. When you read between the lines of everything said last year, you and the relationship with Paul Maurice and a couple of statements, you just kind of wonder where he's at mentally as far as approach to the game and level of commitment in working within the framework of team and all that sort of thing. So the whole response here by Connor Hellebuyck I find to be very intriguing and interesting as well.
And how, never mind the season, how about the first 10 games? Whether or not you, like, whether it's good goaltending or not so spiffy goaltending.
Because the restless at the MTS Center will pounce.
It's a powder keg.
Yeah.
And it's going to erupt, and it's going to happen in one of two ways. And one will be positive, and one will be negative. And those first 10 games are going to be so gigantic in kind of setting the tone for the whole season. And I guess I'll try and take my Flyers hat off for a bit, but
you better.
Steve Mason's, I really think he's a hell of a goalie. I think he's a really, really good goalie, and I think he's going to do real big things for this team this year. I expect him to have a really, really strong year.
See, and some people I've talked to, it's hit or miss. Like, they believe in Mason and think this is the thing that's going to get him over the top, even by pushing Hellebuyck. And others believe that, man, if he has even a slight bump or slump for 10 or 12 games.
Well, he has a year like last
year.
Yeah. Then there's going to be trouble. He's got to rebound back to the guy he was in Philadelphia in 11 through 13, or in his first two or three years there, right?
I was listening to the Afternoon Ride yesterday with Hustler and Rick Ralph, and Hustler made the point of, and he said he was discussing this with some people he knew, and he honestly believes that if the Jets get in the playoffs or come playoff time, it could be Hellebuyck starting. That this will really push him, that,
could.
You know, we forget about the fact that he is talented. He, despite, you know, his struggles and his little break they gave him and everything going on last year, that was just, and I agree with him, it was normal development for a guy in his first year in the National Hockey League. But with Mason here and Mason maybe getting a couple extra wins and pushing Hellebuyck, and he, just without Mason, his overall development, that Hustler feels that this whole situation could, it would not surprise him that if the Jets get in the postseason, that it's Connor Hellebuyck actually starting.
Hey, Mason was 908 last year, and Connor Hellebuyck, with all the struggles and the ups and downs, was 907. So they're basically, from that standpoint, the same. And they both share a level of struggle in shorthanded situations, which doesn't play well for Steve Mason coming into the situation with the Winnipeg Jets, right, who are shorthanded their fair share. So I think it's a wide-open type battle. I know that everyone's given the nod to Mason early here, but I have to try and determine who's going to be the guy late in the season. I think that's a tricky thing to do.
It's going to be, I mean, as you said, it's a powder keg, just to see what happens and how it plays out. And not just for the goaltender, but Troy touched on the penalties, everything else, if they help them out for sure. I was having this conversation on the weekend with somebody, and a couple of people saying, you know, how you think they're actually getting anything. I go, you know what? You'll know in this first month. Like, they host Toronto, go to Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver. They host Carolina, Columbus, next month, I should say, Carolina, Columbus, and Minnesota. They then go to Pittsburgh, Columbus, host Pittsburgh, and host Minnesota.
That's way too much Pittsburgh.
Like, there's Pittsburgh, right? Twice. There's the Wild twice. There's Edmonton and Calgary and Toronto. And there's the Blue Jackets twice.
Yeah, you don't get a night off there.
Those are all playoff teams from last season. So we talk about the American Thanksgiving, end of November and stuff. End of October, I mean, you, in my opinion, minimal have to be 500 after this month of September.
Oh, yeah.
Toronto, Calgary, Edmonton, Columbus twice, Minnesota twice, Pittsburgh twice. Throw in a Vancouver and Carolina, and that's your opening month to the season. It's going to be very interesting. Kevin Cheveldayoff was not on TSN 1290 yesterday, but you're listening to that today on The Big Show. But he was on the NHL Network on Sirius XM. He was also asked about Patrick Laine's second year in the National Hockey League.
Well, still so fortunate as an organization to have won the lottery that year and move up six spots and get a chance to draft Patrick. And, you know, he's been as advertised and more type thing for us. You know, he's a real humble, respectful, you know, hockey player that wants to work real hard to be the best at his game. And you know, we think he's just scratching the surface. He came leaps and bounds from the X's and O's standpoint of the game, you know, the nuances of playing defense and, you know, just learning how to play in the National Hockey League. But his natural talents are just phenomenal and fit in real well with the group of players that we have. So, you know, we're excited for year two of Patrick Laine and obviously, you know, the chemistry that he's developed with either Scheifele or Little or, you know, Wheeler or Ehlers. You know, again, there's lots of different options there for Paul to be able to mix and match with.
Which Jet are you guys most interested in what he does this year compared to last?
Well, I was going to ask you guys what your realistic expectations are for Laine.
Specifically
for Laine? 36 goals, 64 points, 73 games.
I think he eclipses 40 goals.
Paul Maurice's line that always stood out to me from year one about Scheifele and Trouba is, you know, 4 or 5 months of the offseason, I realistically expect these guys to get 10 to 15% better. That's, you know, 4 or 5 months. We're not talking about that. That's what he was expecting.
Yeah.
From most rookies, he says, I don't, you know, the off season, we always say that's a new year, but in reality, it's 4 months. And I 4.5, 5 months, I if you progress in 4.5, 5 months, 10 to 15% to get better, that's enough for him as a coach.
Well, that's a lot. That's a lot, man, for any athlete to improve that much over 4 months, right? And I suppose you're talking about the second year, and we remember we got the call from Finland last week, right? For that he's getting bigger and all the rest of it. I wonder what a general expectation would be. This would be a fun thing to ask people to call in and tell us. Like, are people expecting 50 out of him? You know, like to me, 42, 43, somewhere in there would be spectacular. Again, and just to see him a little bit more in control of things out there, I suppose, sort of tuned in. Or defensively, like he and Ehlers for sure to take that sort of step and firmly want to see him planted in a religious manner on Laine Island on the power play.
It is so hilarious to me that we can legitimately look at a 19-year-old kid and say, yeah, we should get about 40 goals out of him. Like there's just that to me is just hilarious. Like it's true. Like that's the crazy part. Like if he doesn't get 40 goals, there's going to be a big contingent of fans in this city that will be disappointed with this season, which is it's just crazy to me. So I guess I would have to say 40 goals is kind of what you expect out of him, and maybe the assist totals to jump up a little bit. I mean he could get 36 again and be a much better player too. That's the other side of the equation. So for me, if he kind of, and I guess he was technically on a 40 goal pace anyways with the amount of time
Fair point.
Missed, or he would have been right around that. So, yeah, I'd be thrilled if he got 70 points, 35 to 40 goals, but just looked a bit more aware throughout the entire length of the ice, kind of thing. Just become a better player overall.
You guys expect better production from the lineup as a whole, or do you expect better? What's the right term to keep the puck out of the net?
Well,
like to me,
game,
to me, if every player didn't score, you know, was down 5 to 6 to 7 up to 10 points off last year's pace, but they are way better defensively, I think that's a better advantage than it is to put numbers and see the numbers increase.
It is, but I don't think those two things need to be. Those two things can coexist, where you can be more productive, you know, some level more productive than seventh in the NHL in team scoring, and be more sound defensively. And we'll talk to Gus Katsaros about this. This is a point he makes often, and I agree 100%. There is no reason in the world why you cannot be an offensive force and still be very sound and responsible defensively.
And I think a part of that, too, I mean, look at the top teams in the NHL in scoring. All of them are, I would hazard a guess at least, outside of the Jets, that all of them are within the top 10 of power play percentage as well. Right? So, I mean, that's something the Jets need to take advantage of, and you don't have to put so much stress on your 5-on-5 scoring. But, yeah, you're right. Like, this team can be 7th in scoring offensively again and technically not take a leap forward and be a much more difficult team to play against.
As for the one player I watch the most, I think it's, for me, it's Mark Scheifele. I want to see if he can be a consistent point-per-game player. I you know, if he plays 82 games and has 75 points, I don't think that's – I just would be very impressed if he can go back-to-back point-per-game.
What were you going to say? You don't think that's what if he goes 75 points in 82 games?
I don't think that's a massive regression or a bad
season.
Hell
no, it isn't, no.
But, I mean, after he put up 82 points in 79 games and hit the 30-goal plateau, he had 32. I'm very interested to see if he can duplicate that and become that consistent point-per-game player. That's, I think, the next thing that I want to – but there's so many people through this lineup. But, you know, like, here's the thing in my point is, Scheifele had 82 points last year. If he has 75, Wheeler had 74 points. If he has 68, if Laine had 64 points last night and or last year and he plays a full season and maybe has 60, 65 again, Ehlers had 64. If he has 60 – I'm fine with that if they're in the playoffs and they've kept more pucks out of the net and taken less penalties.
Well, everybody's fine with everything if they're in the playoffs, period, end of story. Yeah, right? But the well guy said. I'm most intrigued by is Nikolaj Ehlers. I think from a ceiling standpoint, the jump he made the year previous to last, and what might transpire upcoming here, I think by the end of this season, we could be talking about Nikolaj Ehlers as possibly being the very best, most brilliant player here for the Winnipeg Jets. And also, when you look at which forward specifically needs to improve the most defensively, arguably it's Nikolaj Ehlers.
I don't think it's arguably. I think it is Nikolaj Ehlers.
Fair.
Because at least Laine has shown a will. Like, yeah. Laine's mistakes, I think, were more honest based mistakes. In inexperience and things like that, whereas Ehlers, sometimes there was an effort question in there, which you can't have, but I'll jump on Laine as the one to watch, because if he scores 50, who is going to be surprised?
Nobody.
Nobody. Yeah. As a 19-year-old, if he gets to 50, nobody will be surprised at all. And I guess I just have to kind of pull the reins back, because it's hard for me to fathom that a player that young can lead the NHL in scoring. But that's the potential he has, and in a lot of betting books, he is going to be one of the odds-on favorite to do that. Now, I can't wrap my brain around it that he might actually end up with some pretty serious hardware at the end of the year.
Much more from Kevin Sheldayoff's comments on the NHL Network to come. Up next, we'll delve into the AFC picks for the NFL on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Stream us on the iHeartRadio app and all your favorite devices, or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on. TSN 1290 is The Big Show, and TSN 1290 is your radio home in Winnipeg of the National Football League, including Thursday night's opener when the New England Patriots host the Kansas City Chiefs. Of course, the Patriots are defending Super Bowl champs, so we'll go to the AF East. Gentlemen, give us your division winners. And then your playoff teams, who do you think will go through? Might as well start with the AFC East. Can anyone unseed the new – sorry, and I chuckled there because I just looked at the division – the New England Patriots?
There's going to be two records of perfection in the NFC – or the AFC East this year. New England goes 16-0, and the Jets go 0-16. And if I had to pick which of those is – more likely to for sure happen, I'm going to lean towards the Jets going 0-16. It just, that one seems written in the stars. Maybe a miracle sometime around Christmas time here where there's a few wise men involved and they get a win. I don't know, but the Jets just look so bad. This division is just a heck of a struggle. I wonder a little bit here. I think Miami is good enough to possibly secure a wild card spot. One thing I have a lot of trouble with every year we do this, boys, is that I believe it's since the merger in 70, yep, every single year, at the very least, there have been four changes for playoff spots in the NFL. So, but when you look at it, it's you have to conjure up teams, for the most part, like reasons why teams will fall out and in. Like, it's really hard to commit to doing. But for me, in the AFC East, New England wins it with hardly any struggle whatsoever. And I think 16-0 is a real possibility. And Miami is good enough to grab a wild card spot.
I just want to pick Miami to see Jim's head explode as Jay Cutler leads a team to a playoff berth.
Well, that's how I'm surprised even Westy took the Dolphins.
Yeah, I'm not. I'll have to come back to the Dolphins for the wild card, but I think the Dolphins. I think Jay Cutler's going to have a better season than a lot of people envision. The Patriots, I think they're going to be. I'll go 14-2, but the one thing I'm interested in is Tom Brady is 40 years old, and the success rate of NFL quarterbacks at or after the age of 40. Is very, very minimal. And as we saw with Peyton Manning, the fall off is dramatic and it's almost instant. So I kind of think we might see later on in the season, maybe just I don't think it'll stop the Patriots or anything, but a little bit of question marks about where Brady is moving forward. But I think the Jets, I do agree, they are the worst football team we've seen since the Lions in whenever they went 0-16 about, I guess, close to 10 years ago. That they are going to make a legitimate run at going 0-4 this year.
So I have New England, Pittsburgh, Tennessee, Oakland winning their divisions. And I have the Kansas City Chiefs getting in. I don't know about Denver. I don't like Denver's quarterback. And I love or have loved their defense, but they...
Who did you... You asked us about the East. Who did you pick to win each division?
I got New England.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh in the north.
Agreed.
Tennessee in the
south.
Agreed. And Oakland in the west.
Agreed. You have all those same chance for the divisions?
Everyone's taking Tennessee. I'm going to take Houston. I think Houston wins the division still.
Really? Yeah. With no quarterback?
They've made it a...
Their depth chart has two games played in the NFL at that position.
And it might be better than what they had last year.
Fair. Touche, pussycat.
Yeah. So I have Oakland winning the division and the Chiefs going. I also have the Houston Texans in the playoffs, so as a wild card. So do you guys think Denver gets in?
No, my wild cards are Kansas City and Miami.
I'm going to go Chargers-Broncos. I think three teams come out of the AFC West this year.
What?
Well, see, I could see Denver beating Houston out for a wild card, but so you've got Miami, which is the different one, and Rewicki, you have
the Chargers and Broncos, which would be the two teams, the two new teams coming back into the playoffs.
I think that Chargers old line is all kinds of trouble.
I think that the Chargers have had the worst injury luck for 2 years running,
especially on the old line.
And if they get just a teensy bit of help there, and Joey, don't be surprised if Joey Bosa wins Defensive Player of the Year as well. I think that combined together, I think I'll take them as a playoff team. I don't like Tennessee. Everyone's in on Tennessee, mm-hmm. And whenever a team like becomes the consensus trendy pick, I feel like they always fall a bit short.
It's Mariota. So as long as he's healthy, they're going to be up.
Yeah, but Houston's defense will be better than last year, and their defense last year I think was at the top of just about every category.
So you guys don't have Denver in the playoffs either. Well,
I do.
You do. Chargers and Broncos with Oakland winning the division. So you don't have the Chiefs in the playoffs.
No, I think the Mahomes-Smith thing will be a major story. I think 25 out of the last 27 quarterbacks drafted in the first round saw time at some point in their rookie season. So I think at some point the noise is going to be too much and Mahomes will be starting a couple of games, and that'll basically signal the end of Kansas City season.
I like Kansas City's defense too much. That's why
I'm going to great across the board. I think you got to like Kansas City.
All right, gentlemen, those are the picks for the AFC West. We'll open the Boss Pizza fan line, of course, at 9. You can weigh in on your picks for the AFC as well. Tomorrow we'll do the NFC. And up next, Ian Mendez joins the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Not Auto Corp present the Blue Bus before every Wednesday, before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, I should say. We're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Not Auto Corp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you and five buddies up from a starting destination, drive you to the game, and when it's done, we'll take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes six tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter to win now at TSN1290.ca. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290 and the Royal Sports Power Hour with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Our next segment is brought to you by Olympic Building Center. We're going to talk some hockey at the bottom of the hour with Jared Clinton. NHL news and notes in this hour, and of course, Vegas Golden Knights chance to get to Hockey Nights in Vegas coming up as well. But right now we're joined by our good friend. It's been a while, so we're happy to have him back after a summer that I hope treated him well. Mr. Ian Mendez from TSN 1200 in Ottawa. How are you, Ian?
Hey, guys, doing great. I didn't quite have the summer of Shapovalov or the summer of Shapo, but I had a pretty good summer myself. I can't complain.
The summer of George. I mean, the summer of Ian Mendez, exactly. Yeah. We'll start with El Shapo. How impressed are you by him?
Well, I mean, we saw him in Ottawa in February during Davis Cup play, and at the time he was obviously just a very raw rookie, the teenager that nobody had great expectations for him. And then I think obviously watching him beat Rafa Nadal there in Montreal was this real eye-opener for us. And then, I mean, who wasn't pulling for the kid as he made his way through into the fourth round of the U.S. Open? I think the sort of cautionary tale, though, that I always think about, and we don't have to go too far back, is just think of Jeannie Bouchard, right, where it was only a couple of years ago that Jeannie got to the Final Four, the semis of, I think it was Aussie, French, and Wimbledon back-to-back-to-back, and we were thinking, wow, this is just, look at the trajectory here. It's a meteoric rise. It's just going to keep going, and as we've learned, it doesn't always work out that way. So you have to really be excited for what this young man could potentially do and what is there under that backwards hat, because I think he's got all the elements to potentially be not just a star in Canada, but an international star. He just has a certain way about him, a way of playing, and he's unique. But at the same time, you don't want to heap too many expectations on him. And, hey, he's yet to win a tournament. He's taken one of the best players in the history of the game in Nadal, but it wasn't at a major. It was at a tournament where maybe Nadal wasn't quite as invested as he would be at a U.S. Open or a Wimbledon. So I think it's great. I think it's an awesome story. I just hope that it doesn't have the same sort of path as Jeannie Bouchard has had, which has been, I think, the weight of the expectations sort of got on her shoulders to the point where I don't think she's been able to match the hype anywhere close to where she was back in 2014.
I think you share the feelings of a lot of Canadians that are just afraid that Shapovalov turns out sort of flames out the way that Bouchard did. Let's hope that doesn't happen. I want to ask you, how aggressive do you think Shapiro will be this offseason with the Blue Jays?
Ooh, good question. I mean, we've been asking how aggressive Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins are going to be, it feels like, since April, right, when they got off to that awful start where people were talking about blowing this thing up in April, and should you trade Josh Donaldson, should you trade Jay Happ and all that stuff. And I think as you got to the first non-waiver trade deadline at the end of July, when they didn't do anything massive there, you get the feeling that they're sort of in a reload mode, where I wouldn't be surprised if they say to themselves, okay, next year, let's bring back, we got Jay Happ for another year. Hopefully he can bounce back a little bit and be somewhere in between where he was in 2016 and 2017. But I think a lot of this will hinge on Aaron Sanchez. And you got to remember, Sanchez was a guy that in the back half of 2016, he was one of the best four or five starters in the American League. And they basically didn't have him all year. I think they can look themselves in the mirror and somewhat realistically tell themselves, if we get Sanchez or a reasonable facsimile of Sanchez back, that we saw at the back half of last year, we get Stroman pitching the way he has for the most part this year, that's pretty good at the top of your rotation. You get Happ. I mean, I don't know. I think I look at this team, and I think there's still enough pieces there with Donaldson, with Morales. There's still some bats. I don't know if Smoke is back in the picture next year or what, but there's some pieces there. And then you hear the whispers that maybe the Marlins might be willing to part with Giancarlo Stanton and the $300 million that are left owing to him. And you hear a lot of Blue Jays fans saying, hey, I hope that the Jays are willing to maybe eat that type of salary. And maybe that's something that they would look at. And I can't see them tearing this thing down, because in my heart of hearts, I feel like if they were going to tear it down, they would have torn it down by moving Donaldson at the trade deadline, so that some team would have had two pennant drives out of him instead of potentially moving him this summer and really not getting much in return.
Ian Mendez from TSN 1200 in Ottawa joining us today on the big show, TSN 1290. Ian, along those lines, TSN baseball analyst Dirk Hayhurst was on a program this morning on one of our affiliate stations, and the comment stood out to me that if the Jays were in the playoff hunt right now, Roberto Osuna would be removed as the closer. Do you agree with that? And talk about Osuna, who blew his 10th save of the season last night in Boston.
Yeah, and that's just it, right? I mean, he blows another one last night in a game that ends up, going whatever, 18, 19 innings. And it's really, really difficult, because I think Dirk makes a great point, right? If you were at a point where the games really mattered, and your closer blew 10 games for you, I think there'd be people calling for a change. It's tough. Roberto Osuna has had an awful sort of 6-7 week stretch. There was a time in April and May where he was lights out. And you're like, you know what? This guy is the real deal, legit closer. And then ever since the All-Star break, it's kind of come apart for him. And you go back to the time when he took a little bit of a leave for I'm battling some anxiety. I'm battling some sort of off-field issues here. I think that sort of got him a lot of slack with a lot of fans who say, you know what, like, I think we can relate to him. But at some point, you need to say, is he able to do the job? And it's unfortunate, because lately he's not been able to do the job. And I think they have a legitimate question to ask themselves in the offseason: is this the guy to be our closer moving forward? Because up until 6-7 weeks ago, he was great. And the problem is, so much of that role, it has always felt like, is a mentality and a state of mind. And if you lose your confidence, you just simply have none. And that's, he looks to me, I don't love his body language that I've seen the last couple of starts. And I feel like he's blown at least 3 or 4 saves in the last 10 days or so, or 2 weeks. And it's a snowball effect. So I don't know. I think I agree with Dirk in that if they were like 2 games out of a wild card spot, I think you'd have to go bullpen by committee at this point to close out games. But because you're so far out of it and you're basically playing out the string, I think it's in your best interest. Just keep rolling him out there and see if you can't get him back into his sort of the groove that he was in late April and into May.
Ian, on August 12th of this year, Brian Murray passed away of colon cancer, and just beloved by all, and you had a bit of a connection with him. Could you please reflect on Brian Murray and share with us some of your experiences and thoughts of the man?
Yeah, absolutely, Troy. And I think, you know, Brian is, he was one of the best communicators that I've ever seen from a head coach. And I think that's what really resonated with the players here. Like when Ottawa got to the Stanley Cup final in 2007, and they had a really, really elite team, Brian's a guy that kind of pushed them over a little bit, because there were some people that felt like his personality just resonated better as a head coach, where he was just a great communicator. And yeah, to some extent, he was an X's and O's guy, but he was just a great communicator. And that, I think, really extended to those of us in the media, where anytime you had a question and you shot Brian Murray a text, 99 times out of 100, he was going to write you back. And 99 times out of 100, he was going to give you something. And it was really refreshing in this day and age of a lot of general managers, and rightfully so, if they want to be buttoned down and not give out information, I completely respect that. But when you have somebody who's so free-flowing with the information and just legitimately loves to talk hockey 24-7, like Brian was the type of guy, when we'd be out in the playoffs, and this is when he was coaching the team, and the year I think they went to the Stanley Cup final in 07, where, you know, at the end of a night, you'd come back after covering the game and you'd go to the hotel bar. And if you were at the same hotel that the team was staying at, well, there's Brian Murray and kind of, hey, come on over here, sit down with us. And I remember one time, even in Tampa Bay, he ordered pizzas for everybody. in the media and said, hey, listen, pizza's on me and beer's on me. And it wasn't, it never felt like this is a guy trying to kind of curry favor with the media or sort of gain some leverage. Because, you know, Brian had worked in Detroit and Anaheim and Florida and Washington, and he didn't need to come in here and sell himself on anybody. He was just a guy that loved to talk hockey. And so I think it's really, really sad the way it ended for him, that he never got to see his team here win a Stanley Cup. He's from the area. That they got one goal short of getting to the Cup last year, I think is even more heartbreaking in retrospect when you look at it through the lens of Brian Murray, that he could have been alive to watch his team in the Stanley Cup final one more time. So it was really sad in August, and I think a lot of us in the hockey world, I think you're going to see, and in some ways, kind of like when Pat Burns, there was a real push to get Pat Burns into the Hockey Hall of Fame. I think you'll see that with Brian. I think there's, you look at the resume and top 10, I believe, in wins all time as a coach, and he put together teams in Anaheim and Ottawa and Florida that, as a general manager, all went to the Stanley Cup final. His biggest red flag is he never won the Cup, but boy, he put together some really wonderful teams, was one of the great characters the last 30 years, and the fact that Gary Bettman came here to Ottawa, guys, for his celebration of life and spoke at it, I think speaks to the volume, or it speaks volumes about the impact that Brian had on the National Hockey League and not just here in Ottawa.
Randy Ambrosi stole that move of buying the media pizza when games go too long the other night in Hamilton.
I saw that. I love that with Matthew Schenetti and the Lightning and Thunder, and you see the commissioner get a little bit.
Well, Milt Siegel's joining us later in the program this morning, and I'm wondering if he's still shaking, but we'll delve into that with him. Ian, right before we let you go, the Ezekiel Elliott situation and the fact that he probably still has to serve six games, but he gets to play on Sunday. Your whole thoughts on the way this has played out and the six-game suspension?
Well, I want to make one thing clear. I think if Ezekiel Elliott is guilty of the things that the NFL says he's guilty of, okay, I think you throw the book at him. And I think six games is ample, and I think it's justified. I think the issue here comes with, did the young man get due process? Did the young man, was he entitled to a fair hearing from the NFL? And the way the NFLPA is painting it, they're saying no, that the NFL's lead investigator who interviewed the young woman at the center of this alleged case of domestic abuse, at the end of her investigation, she came back and told the league, I don't think you should suspend Ezekiel Elliott. And the fact that the league either A, chose to ignore it, or B, chose to not weigh that information sort of appropriately, I think is what Ezekiel Elliott's camp is upset about. And this, in many ways, this is much more serious than Deflategate. I think, you know, Deflategate was about whether or not they let air in and out of a football. And okay, you know what? You can have some fun with that. I don't think you can have any fun with the fact that this is at the center, at the core of this. This is domestic abuse. But I think the parallel is you saw at times it felt like the NFL acted inappropriately with their sort of sweeping hand of justice. And rightly or wrongly, you know, Brady exercised every legal mechanism he had in his playbook to essentially say, hey, I'm playing and there's nothing you can do about it. And it kind of feels like that's what Ezekiel Elliott's doing here. And now, from the sounds of it, and again, a lot of this broke kind of late last night into the wee hours of the morning, it sounds like Ezekiel will play this weekend against the Giants, and then either he'll have to serve his suspension week 2-7, or he might actually be able to win this case and there'll be no suspension and he'll have it completely put off. So I understand what the PA is doing. I think you have to pick your battles, and I don't think you can let this go if you feel like your client was mistreated. But again, I stress, if Ezekiel Elliott was guilty of the stuff that the NFL says he was, I think he needs to sit some games. I think he needs to pay the price. I just wish it was done in a less Roger Goodell way, where it felt like, and it's felt like this ever since Ray Rice, that they did it on the up and up, that they did it transparently, and they did it with complete sort of transparency and being very, very even-handed. It just doesn't feel like they did it again here in the case of Ezekiel Elliott.
Great stuff, Ian. We appreciate your time as always, and enjoy the rest of your week.
Yeah, same to you guys.
Thanks so much, brother. Take care, man.
Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
12th caller through at 780-1290. 780-1290 will be our next qualifier for TSN 1290's Hockey Nights in Vegas, as we're sending five lucky listeners and their guest to Las Vegas this November, when they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We'll supply two hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Las Vegas, four nights accommodations on the Strip, and $1,290 in cold, hard cash to help you cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays right here on The Big Show at 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m., 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable, and 5:15 p.m. on the Afternoon Ride. You can also watch for bonus chances to qualify online, and we will be giving away some live tickets, or qualifications, I should say, not tickets, qualifications on Facebook. So make sure you go to and friend our 1290 Facebook page. Winners will be announced on Monday mornings right here on The Big Show, September 11th, September 25th, twice in October on the 9th and the 23rd, and our final grand prize draw will be on November the 6th. For more information, you can check out tsn1290.ca, and all the details are there too. But it's Hockey Nights in Vegas. Go all in with TSN 1290. 12th caller through at 780-1290 will be our next qualifier. And Mr. Brandon Rewicki, our next qualifier is?
It is Mike Carrier.
Mike Carrier!
How you doing?
Good. How are you, sir?
Excellent. Thank you.
What's your nickname? I want to see what we can get out of Carrier.
That's a tough one.
Westwood didn't weigh in.
Carrier-Z?
There you go.
Mike, have you ever been to Vegas?
No.
Never.
Oh, it beckons for
you.
Was
that,
man,
just a wise move on your part, or has this just been unavoidable?
Probably column A, little column B.
Hey, very well. Excellent. We're also going to kick in $1,290 cash of several shows on the Strip, as well as the hockey games. Do you know who you might be taking, and if a show or two on the Strip interests you?
Oh, I'm sure my best friend or my wife. Yeah.
Wow, let the debate begin. Mike is about to be treated very well over the next couple of weeks in case he wins. Hey, Mike, we haven't done this with this contest yet before, but what are your thoughts on the Jets this season?
Well, I like it. I just hope that they can do better than getting bounced in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
I'm really optimistic about Mason. So.
Awesome, Mike. Well, hey, we really, really appreciate you listening to TSN 1290, and we have your name in just for qualifying today. You get a Jets Gear gift card, and even if you don't win on September 11th, our first grand prize draw, you'll remain entered for the next four on the 25th, the 9th, and 23rd of October, and November 6th. Thanks for listening to TSN 1290, and best of luck.
Awesome. Thank you.
Good luck, Crizzy. Hey, we were talking about the difficulty of October for the Jets. And then they open November. They go Dallas, Montreal, Dallas. And then they get they better make something out of Vegas, Coyotes. Right? So they got that little relief thing there. But my goodness, October, early November? Mother.
Yeah. It's wow. It just stood out to me on the weekend. Somebody was asking me, and then another person asked me, and I just sort of was thinking about it. And I said, well, you'll know at the end of October. Yeah. Like, you have to be 500. You have to have gone.
I don't even know if that's good enough, honestly.
I don't know if that's good enough, but that
is certainly not good enough to make the playoffs.
If you go something like two or three wins in October, you're behind the eight ball big time, in my mind.
It's more than that.
They're going to have to be above 500.
If you're 2-3 or whatever at the end of October, look out.
Yeah, it's daunting. Congratulations once again to Mike Carrier, our latest qualifier. He gets a Jets gear card, and of course he's in for the five grand prize draw. We'll do it again this morning on The Big Show at 8:15. Hockey Talk with Jared Clinton of the Hockey News next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, 33 minutes past the hour on a cool September morning here in the city of Winnipeg, but it will get up to 19 today and supposed to be sunny out, so it will warm up, but fall is definitely here. Back to school today, officially, I think, for all the kids. Was it yesterday? But I see most
It's today and tomorrow.
Today and tomorrow. So yep. Be careful in the school zones, of course, and good luck to all the kids returning to school.
And congratulations to all the parents
more so,
who survived summer. Off to school, you little germ bags.
I thought a couple of minutes ago I heard like a William Wallace in Braveheart scream, freedom! Be careful in the school zones, of course. Go to the speed limit and watch out for all the little ones and the big ones going back to school today. And have a great school year, everybody. A lot of excitement around the Jets and, of course, the National Hockey League. Training camp's less than 2 weeks away. Lots of stuff to get to, and we're going to do so with Winnipeg's very own Jared Clinton, a contributor to the Hockey News. Jared, welcome back. How are you?
Not too bad. How are you guys?
Very good, thank you. We're just discussing this morning some of Kevin Cheveldayoff's comments, and we'll get into more of them later on in the show on the NHL Network on SiriusXM yesterday. However, we got into the schedule, and I wanted to get your impressions on that first month for the Winnipeg Jets and how important it is. And everybody talks about a good start, but with Edmonton and Calgary on the docket and Toronto, Columbus twice, Pittsburgh twice, and Minnesota, the start for this year's Jets team is probably more important than other years.
Yeah, and I think it's a good measuring stick for the team, too. Cheveldayoff is going to need to know right out of the gate what he has in this team, especially with, you know, the team kind of having this year in front of it where it's a year where they need to make a move. They need to start showing that they can compete in the Central and compete for a playoff spot. So I think it's almost a good thing for them to start off, with as tough a schedule as they will have, because that gives them the opportunity to show, you know, this is where maybe we need some help, or this is where we're successful and we can rely on this team. So I think it's a good thing, actually. The start's going to be really, really important, as you said, though. The Central Division's just, it's insane how talented that division is. I have a feeling it's going to be like last year's Metropolitan, where every team is right in the thick of the playoff race, especially the top four. So I think we're looking at a start that's going to maybe make or break the season. It's an important thing for the team to have that tough start, because they need the challenge right out of the gate and need to prove that they can actually compete in the Central.
Jared, last year one of the surprise teams would be the Columbus Blue Jackets and their level of success in the Metropolitan. Your thoughts on what you expect from them this year and where they're at as an organization?
I think expectations should kind of be tempered a little bit. I don't think they're going to repeat what they did last year. I mean, any team that goes on a 16-game win streak, that's not exactly sustainable. I don't think they're going to pull that off again. But I do see this team kind of being consistent as far as being a playoff contender. I don't think we're going to see a top three finish in the Metro again. Maybe we're looking at a wild card spot this time around. But that's probably where they're going to lie. I could see some regression. You know, Bobrovsky, he's had this kind of tendency to go up and down and fluctuate as far as his numbers go. So I could see that being the case once again. Offensively, I think this team has a lot of strengths. I really like the addition of Panarin. I wrote a thing about Alexander Wenberg yesterday, and kind of looking at his numbers, you know, a lot of people don't really talk about him as a top line center. But I think he's got potential there. He's only 22. He's a really, really skilled playmaker. And, you know, getting Artemi Panarin in there to play next to Wenberg is going to really give that offense a boost. So I think the organization offensively is good. And I think, you know, maybe some people don't really think too much about the depth they have on defense. Zach Werenski coming out party big time last year as a rookie, and Seth Jones just continues to improve. And I think he's almost, you know, the underrated star on that defense right now. So I think up and down that lineup, it's solid, but I don't think we're going to see a repeat performance of last season.
Jared, Henrik Zetterberg has come out and said the 2018 season, so two more years for him, will be his final one, and he will retire from the National Hockey League. And, you know, it'll be disappointing. I'm a big fan, and I'm sure most hockey fans like watching him play. But when you look at the Detroit Red Wings, is it a good thing that they're going to have him for two more years, or what's going on there, and should they move on?
I'm kind of in that you'd love to have him for four more years, which is what his contract is. You'd love to for two more years. But I think with the way the organization's kind of going right now, maybe it is time to cut ties. I'm not saying they're going to trade him. I'm not saying they're going to just buy him out and let him go back to Sweden early. But I think it would almost be best for Detroit to lose Zetterberg and kind of have an organizational reset a little bit. You know, you've got some core pieces there in Larkin, Mantha. Hopefully they figure something out with Athens CU. You'd really like to see that happen. But Detroit's just a team that, you know, they had success for 25 years. That's about as good as you can ask for in any sport. And I just don't think that the team's ready to let go or the organization's ready to let go of that success. And I think they kind of need to come to terms with the fact that, you know, they're not going to go on another 25-year playoff streak, or they're not going to go on a playoff streak at all if they don't start resetting and bringing in fresh faces and trying to, I'm not going to outright say fail for a few years, but try to, I don't know, rebuild from within or rebuild with young talent. And that's going to mean some tough years. And I think they need to come to the realization that having some tough years or having some difficult years now is the best way to have success later. You just look at the draft picks they've had, and it's been a long, long time since they've had a top 10 pick. And, you know, having won this past year, that's fine. But you have to get them, you know, consistently in order to build an organization that's going to be strong down the line.
Jared, your thoughts of the Canucks picking up Thomas Vanek, and also ultimately, how do you see things playing out with the Sedins in Vancouver?
When it comes to Vanek, I you know, that's a guy who can come and he can provide some scoring. Maybe he's not going to be a 40-goal scorer like he was early in his career. Actually, that's not even a maybe, that's a definitely. But, you know, he could probably put up 20 goals if he finds the right line mates. He had a pretty good year in Detroit last year, too. But I think the ultimate plan with Vanek, and I said this yesterday, is I think they want to ultimately flip him at the deadline. It seems crazy to be talking about the trade deadline when the season hasn't even started. But he's exactly the type of guy that teams will be after at the deadline. You know, he's got size, he's got strength, he can play on the power play. He's not going to be a top liner for any team that's in playoff contention, but he could very well be a guy who chips in 2, 3, 4 goals on a deep playoff run. And there will be teams who are looking for depth scoring wingers around the time the playoffs come around. When it comes to the Sedins, you know, free agency next year, so everyone's going to talk a little bit about what's next for them or where they go from here, but it's really difficult to see them going anywhere but Vancouver. I really don't think they're prepared to leave. I really don't know if there are any teams that would be willing to or have the cap space to take one or both on at the deadline. You know, it just seems like it's one of those things where it's almost a Matt Sundin thing. Not to compare one Swede to another pair of them, but it just seems like they're going to last a long time with a team that really doesn't have true Stanley Cup hopes, and that's kind of the way their career is going to go. Maybe they end up somewhere for one year. Beyond this year, I just see them staying in Vancouver, maybe on a little bit cheaper deals so they can build around the Sedins a bit more and maybe hope for one, you know, late last run when these guys are 40, 41.
Jared Clinton of the Hockey News joining us on the Big Show this morning, TSN 1290, 41 minutes past the hour. Will Butcher, the Hobie Baker Award winner, decided on the defenseman of the University of Denver going the free agent route. He signed with New Jersey. I was a little surprised at the amount that he got, being basically what an entry-level contract is after going the free agent route. Your thoughts on his decision not only to go to New Jersey, but for that kind of cash?
I mean, the money thing, he's going to take whatever he can get, and he's going to take, if a team's going to offer him, you know, max entry-level deal or, you know, big money for him to go there, then he should take it. He should honestly go after whatever he thinks he's worth or whatever he can get. As far as going to New Jersey goes, I think that's the best decision for him. I think there was a lot of people, myself included, who kind of speculated he'd want to go closer to home, maybe end up with Chicago or Minnesota. But you look at those rosters, and that's really not a place where he's going to get much playing time. Chicago, you could argue, he'd probably get third-pairing minutes, and the Blackhawks could use a defenseman to play on that third pairing. But I think in New Jersey, he's got more of an opportunity to grow, more of an opportunity to play difficult minutes. And I think that's maybe the best thing for him. You know, it's a little bit of a trial by fire for a defenseman, but, you know, he can play power play minutes. He can play around guys who've been in the league for a while, in Ben Lovejoy and Andy Green, and those are guys who can help kind of guide him and shepherd him into the league, and I think that's really important for him. I think New Jersey offers him, you know, ample opportunity to grow as a player and become a fixture on that defense too, which I don't think many other organizations do. The Devils just don't have the depth defensively to really there anyone else to have LeBron? There's Damon Severson, maybe, you know, if he pans out or continues to pan out. But beyond Severson, you know, there's not a whole lot of top-tier potential defensemen who are a young age that can be cornerstones in the future.
Jared, we're getting some dicey spots, it seems, with your sell right now. But I want to ask you, how impactful do you think Patrick Marleau is going to be with the Maple Leafs this year?
Sorry, Jared, we'll get you to try that again. Your cell phone just cut in and out. So just your thoughts on Marleau again with the Leafs?
Yeah, I think he can still be a big-time contributor, like a 20-25 goal guy. You look at him, he still has the speed. He still has the speed that he always had. And I think that's the most important aspect of his game right now. You know, he's lost half a step, not a full step. But, you know, with the way he skates on a team that has options for him to play alongside, he doesn't need to be an elite playmaker anymore. He just needs to be a trigger man. And I think as far as trigger men go, you know, you can't really go bad with having someone like Patrick Marleau on your lineup. So he still could be a 25, 30 goal guy, given the opportunity to do so. And I like that signing for them. You know, the 3-year deal, people are going to kind of scoff at that. But I think the plan isn't to have him play the third year of that deal. I think everyone's kind of eyeing up the lockout in that third season and really looking at this as more of a 2-year deal.
Jared, great stuff. As always, you can follow him on THN, Jared Clinton, on Twitter. Thanks for doing this and enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys.
Thanks so much, Jared. Take care.
Jared Clinton of the Hockey News once again on The Big Show. We're going to take a break. When we come back, NHL News and Notes will delve into more of Kevin Cheveldayoff's comments on the NHL Network yesterday on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
NHL News and Notes time on The Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you. Milt Stegall will also join us at the top of the next hour. Kevin Cheveldayoff on the NHL Network yesterday discussing his team and the offseason moves, including his thoughts on Dmitry Kulikov, the free agent defenseman signed defenseman.
Well, yeah, he is a very experienced young defenseman, a defenseman mature, and, you know, at a different point in time than forwards and goaltenders. And, you know, we feel he's coming right into his sweet spot. You know, you can't control injuries. And last year he had, to deal with a bad one. But I do remember watching him play, you know, in Florida. I do remember watching him play in the last Florida playoff series, and he was one of their best defensemen. So sometimes fresh starts and fresh opportunities will breed some great things. And again, in free agency, you're looking to add, and there was a possibility and a match between him and us, and we were able to make it work. So if him coming back in, and if Tyler Myers can continue his rehab as he's done throughout the summer, where he missed 70 games last year, you get him in the lineup, you get Tyler in the lineup, you get a Josh Morrissey who's a year older, and then obviously Trouba and Bufflin and Enstrom, we feel we've got a real strong core if we can keep it healthy.
Kulikov's made the playoffs twice with the Florida Panthers. He's played in a grand total of 13 games, a goal and an assist. But in 2015-16, in six games in the playoffs, he had a goal and three helpers, 4 points. Season derailed by injuries. And just when he was on the ice, just wasn't very good with Buffalo. But I really like this move at 26 years old. He's got 507 games experience. And if he can be healthy, I remember that playoff. He was dynamic. Shut down, put up a couple points. What are your expectations for him, and who do you see him paired with?
I expect to see him paired with Dustin Bufflin and, on the second pairing. And I'm really intrigued by this as well. I think there's all kinds of potential upside to come with the signing. Anyone that's dealt with or seen the impacts of what a back injury can do and how that can derail everything you're doing athletically, and if he's coming back healthy And, you know, I look at the Bomber O-line, and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, they deserved, knocking on wood as I say this, to have a season where their O-line was going to be healthy. Just ravaged by injuries for so long, it seemed, so many years. And the same situation sort of presents itself with the blue line of the Jets. How much bad luck, how many injuries, really, year after year, can you be dealing with as an organization? For Pete's sake, if there's an organization out there that deserves a good run on the blue line upcoming this season for health, certainly it's the Winnipeg Jets. And can you imagine if they play the vast majority of their games with Morrissey, Trouba, Bufflin, Kulikov, and Enstrom Myers? That's just spectacular. And if they get a little bit lucky with injury, it could really be something special.
Yeah, I would expect, and I would hope Kulikov starts the year with Bufflin as well. I kind of like having a, and they're not immobile either, but two big cats out there. And give a bit of a physical presence on that back end that can still play inside their own end. It's something the Jets, have they ever had it? Like, really? Like,
no.
Maybe Ben Sherrod in his rookie year with Buff, but other than that, that kind of aspect's been a bit absent from the team. So I do like the signing. I like the fact that you get a free agent defenseman who's not exiting his prime or has already exited it, right? You get a guy who at 26 through his late 20s should still be able to put up some solid performance, and I don't think he was the player that he was in Buffalo last year. So that, like Troy said there, even if he can get 65 to 70 games out of all six of these guys together, and just get some average injury luck there, that it'll be interesting. I'm really intrigued to see that, and I'm also intrigued to see how this ice time gets doled out, because it's not like last year where you could look at the third pairing and say, well, here's 10 minutes, and you're not going to get too much of a complaint out of those guys. You're not going to be able to give Enstrom and Myers 10 to 12 minutes. They're going to be asking and demanding, and probably rightfully so, somewhere between 18 and 20.
And more so Myers, right?
Yes.
Yeah, like how they manage the right side in the minutes to me is most intriguing, especially when you look at Jacob Trouba, who's still emerging, still blossoming, and has that sort of workhorse mentality and seems to play better when he's up around 25 minutes a night.
I have Kulikov with Bufflin as well. I have him about 20, 22 minutes a night. And I like the aspect of I think he's more offensive than we've seen in the past couple of seasons, and I like that aspect with Bufflin, but I also like the physicality that pairing could bring. It'll be interesting to see who he is playing with and paired with. He is in Winnipeg right now, and he is taking part in the informal skates going on at the Iceplex with some of the Jets players and some other NHLers and pro hockey players that are getting ready for training camps before they leave town and those coming into town. This is the Big Show, TSN 1290, NHL News and Notes. We'll continue with Kevin Cheveldayoff's comments in an interview from the NHL Network, and he talked about young players trying to make this year's team.
Well, the beautiful thing about young players is that, you know, their better games and their best games are all in front of them, and we've watched the development of Mark Scheifele over the last couple of years from a rookie, a young player, you know, struggling to try to, ply his way and be an impact player to the impact player that he's become. Nick Ehlers is going into his third year, 25 goals last year. Patrick Laine is a young player, but, you know, that's why we added, some veteran experience, even though it's on the bottom six side with Matt Hendricks. But, you know, you still got the leadership of Blake Wheeler, of Brian Little, of Matthew Perreault. There is enough of a veteran kind of mix there, but, you know, a young player in October is different than a young player in April. And, that's how teams get better.
Who's it going to be? Is it Kyle Connor that comes up and sticks and stays and gets you 20? And how far up do you push him? I saw a lineup possibility with Connor with Little and Wheeler. How would that work? Is Jack Roslovic ready to come and stick and stay and contribute? And might there be a surprise, should there be any setbacks with injury, with a Tucker Poolman or a Sammy Niku? Who's it going to be, man?
And you know what? I get a real solid sense that this team wants Brendan Lemieux to make the Winnipeg Jets. Just to add that kind of sandpaper,
sure,
pest, grit sort of thing. Like, you know, maybe your more typical fourth line role. I don't know if he'll do it. And we've talked about it before. I think you need a bit more point production in the AHL before you can take that jump to make the big club. But
and
I think he'll be
disciplined, right? Like, look at his
very fair. But I think he's a bit of a long shot. But I think he'll be given a bigger and a better opportunity than a lot of people might originally think.
I have Kyle Connor making the team this year.
Most everyone does, I believe.
Yeah. I would be surprised if he didn't make it. And I think it would be a bit of a disappointment, too, with how we finished the AHL last year.
He looked like a man amongst boys out there in the A in the games that I saw with the Moose. And when he and a nice little – it was only a single game, but looked real comfortable in that one game. So there's all kinds of anticipation for sure.
And Roslick, I'm not so sure of, but the Young Stars tournament gets started this weekend. September the 8th is the first game for the Jets, and we'll have extensive coverage, of course, right here on TSN 1290. But what the guys like, Tucker Poolman and some of the D-men that are out there will be very interesting in how they set up and maybe get that invite to main training camp and see what they can do from there. But the one guy I think will take a step up, Rossovic, we'll have to keep an eye on as well, but I think it's going to be Connor that sticks and stays. That's your NHL news and notes. We'll take your comments on some of Kevin Cheveldayoff's comments on the Boss Pizza fan line at 9. But up next, we talk some CFL with a Blue Bomber legend and panelist on TSN, Mr. Milt Stegall, on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. Starting hour three, we'll have another chance for you to qualify for our hockey nights in Vegas this hour. Some more hockey talk with Gus Katsteros at the bottom of the hour, and we'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line. We've been playing some of Kevin Cheveldayoff's comments on the NHL Network yesterday throughout the program. Get your thoughts on that and the Jets. Of course, Banjo Bowl, Jerron Carter says he was spit on by a Bomber fan, and a Bomber fan tried to take off Gator the Gopher's head. I mean, if there's children watching and a mascot's head comes off, that is...
Oh, that's... Yes.
That's traumatic.
Yeah. It truly is.
So we'll get your thoughts on that. And, of course, and the Banjo Bowl that's coming up, Ezekiel Elliott looks to be playing in Week 1 Sunday night between the Giants and the Cowboys, but his six-game suspension was upheld. And we can weigh in on that. We gave our AFC picks. Lots to get to on the Boss Pizza fan line at 9 o'clock. And, of course, the Riders have come out, head coach Chris Jones yesterday, and said, denied they were faking injuries. Somebody who never faked an injury, I would presume, is Milt Stegall, a former Blue Bomber great, big part of the panel on TSN. Or Milt, good morning. Am I correct in that, or did you ever fake an injury?
No, never faked the injury. Actually, I don't ever remember being injured, so.
You wouldn't even know how to fake one because you've never experienced it.
It never happened. It never happened.
But the thing I want to, and we talked about this a little bit, Milt, back in the day, if Cal Murphy would have looked at you and said, go down, or something like that, you would salute and go down. That's just the way it was, right?
Yeah. Fortunately, he never asked me because I don't know if I would have actually done that, you know.
They would have asked other guys, not you out there.
Yeah, but it happened. Yeah. It happened. You know, after a defense get an interception for a touchdown and Troy Westwood kicks the extra point, 90% of the time they're asking one of those guys to go down to give the defense more rest. So it's part of the game. I know a lot of people are concerned that it tarnishes the game, but if it's not illegal, if it's not, you know, some people may say it's cheating. I mean, it's just a strategic move. And Chris Jones, I know he's saying those guys weren't faking injuries. They were clearly faking injuries, but actually I have no problem with it because it's not illegal.
Yeah, and that's kind of the way I feel. It's disrespectful to the game maybe or you know, the morale of the game, but it's not illegal. And that then begs the question, is there anything the league can do about it or is it just part of the game?
It's part of the game. It's been part of the game forever, and it's going to continue being part of the game. There's nothing you can do about it because there's no way you can legitimately say if the player is faking or if it's truly an injury. There's no way you can determine that. So you can't do anything about it. And it really doesn't happen that often, and that's why we're making a big deal out of it, because it's happening now, you know. So we'll see, you know, if it continues happening. But as far as doing something about it, there's no way you can put yourself in a position to do something about that.
Milt, in this day and age, though, and maybe especially, well, really with all sports, where things offensive are so cherished, right? Things in hockey that are offensive are cherished because people ultimately think that helps to sell the game. In football, you want to keep things offensive because the splash of offense sells the game. I wonder if a guy like Randy Ambrosian, watching what's probably going to unfold again in the Banjo Bowl, where Chris Jones pushes this rule to the very limit, and there's three or four, maybe more than that, occasions where they utilize having a guy go down to slow down the cheetah. I wonder if a notion such as now a player needs to miss six plays instead of three is something that he might put into effect going forward.
But that's, I just talked about that, but how will you know if the injury is, if it's a true injury? You have no idea. So say if a player gets injured on a long drive, right, and he's truly injured, and after three plays, he's well enough to go back in the game. But because of this new rule, he can't go back into the game.
Well, it used to be you didn't have to miss any plays, right? Like they instituted three plays at one point in time. Can't they bump that to six just to, even though the guy might be ready to go, just to thwart this type of action?
No, I don't like that, because you don't know if the guy is ready to go. What if this is one of your main players and he is truly hurt, but after three plays, he's ready to go back in the game? This is a crucial drive in the game, and your starting defensive end, who's leading the CFL in sacks, can't go back into the game because you implemented this new rule. And that's where the problems arise. So you can't implement, you can't change that. You just have to deal with it, because there's no other way to determine if that player is truly injured or not.
Milt Stegall joining us this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 9 minutes past the hour. Let's talk about the game itself, Milt. What were your impressions of it and the loss for the Bombers, and what does it mean going forward? What did you see in the game that stood out for both teams?
Well, the one thing you saw is the confidence level that these Rough Riders are playing with now. I think Chris Jones, they're buying into it. He's letting them know that they're the greatest players on the planet Earth, and they're going out there and playing like it now. The one thing for the Bombers, a big part of the reason why they've been successful was they've been able to run the ball. But when you get down like that, it's difficult to run the ball. Paul Law Police wants to run the ball, but if you want to run the ball, you have to be in the game early. So that's going to be a big part of this upcoming game. The Bombers have to stay in the game early. They can't let the Rough Riders get out to an early start, because you eliminate one of the best players, not only on your team in the CFL, and that's Andrew Harris. I think he and Flanders total had 11 carries, and that's not good when you have a dual running back set like that. So if the Bombers can allow themselves to stay in the game early, run the ball, they have a great chance. They can't allow those Rough Riders to get out early, because those guys are playing with a high level of confidence right now.
Now, just to sort of expand on that a little bit, Milt, when you look at, and we knew coming into this game that Chris Jones doesn't blitz a lot. And when you look at how, like in 43 of 47 pass rush situations, Saskatchewan sent four or fewer rushers. So the game plan, like you're touching on with Paul LaPolice here, an absolutely critical part of the game as to whether or not this offense can be successful on Saturday.
Yeah, and you talked about it. They were able to get pressure with just, you know, three and four guys. And when you're able to do that, you're able to drop back eight or nine guys. I don't care how smart of a offensive coordinator you are, how great of a quarterback you are, you're not going to get many opportunities to be successful in second and medium or second and long. So that's why they have to get that running game going early, to put themselves in second and medium so they can force some teams to play some man-to-man coverage. And that's when you get the big play. So it's going to be critical. Chris Jones is really changing up things. In years past, he was all about putting pressure on quarterbacks. I mean, it could be second and 20, and he would take a chance. But now it seems like he's realizing that he needs to change things up. He has some very talented guys. Ed Gainey is having a great year. Even Javon Johnson is playing well out there. So they have to. Winnipeg Blue Bombers have to have some success on first down and force Saskatchewan's defense to play some man-to-man coverage, and then they have a great chance of winning this game.
So, Mel, going into the Banjo Bowl, what are some of the, I guess, the intricacies of it you're looking at? Because is it a bigger game for the Riders or the Bombers after the Labor Day Classic?
Well, I think it's big for both teams. It's big for the Bombers because they want to show that, you know, we can still play with the better teams. You know, they beat Edmonton, and then, you know, that game is forgotten about because of the way they lost to Saskatchewan. And it's big for Saskatchewan because they want to show they can continue, that they're one of the elite teams. You know, besides Calgary, they're playing some of the best football right now. So they want to show that. So it's important for both teams. And it's important because both of these teams are in the West. And we see how the West is going. It's looking like it's going to be four teams that are going to get into the playoffs. And it's not just to say, okay, the team who crosses over is going to make it to the Grey Cup. If I'm a team in the West, I would rather stay in the West and try to win it through the West and crossing over, because that just doesn't serve you well. So it's an important game for both teams. Every game from here on out is important, starting with the Banjo Bowl this weekend.
Milt, you look at, everybody knew Calgary is going to be strong, but you look at their level of domination right now, and it's just so ridiculously impressive.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And you look at the fact that they've been able to do this, and Bo Levi Mitchell, I mean, he set the bar so high, but he's not even playing well right now. But they have so many other aspects of their game that are doing well. You have the best punt returner in the game. You have the best defense in the game with the best defensive coordinator. So when one facet of their game is struggling, the other two step up. So it's truly unbelievable what they've been able to do, not only this year, but just basically the past 10 years. They are the best organization. They do everything the best right now, and it shows with the way they're performing on the field.
With all that's gone on in Hamilton the past week and a half to 2 weeks, Milt, they get their first win of the season with Zach Claros on the bench. Where do they go from here, and how big of a win was that?
That was a humongous win, but they have so many other things going on. You can only sweep so many things underneath the rug. That was good for them to get their first win, but their off-the-field battles are going to continue because we know they're not making the playoffs. If they win another three or four games, they should celebrate, because we know come offseason, Bob Young has to make some changes. I think he's the only one who's secure over there. He's the only one who's actually not going to get fired, because he can't fire himself. But I think come the offseason, they'll have to make some major changes on and off the field.
Milt, do you think BC turns it around and starts to surge again now under Travis Lule?
We'll see. It's not going to be easy, because not only were they struggling on offense, but their defense, which was the strong point for the most part at the beginning of the year, they're not playing the best right now. So they're going to need to score some points. Travis Lule, I mean, I thought he should have never been taken out when Jonathan Jennings came back. I understand why Wally did it, because Jennings is the quote-unquote future. But I feel if you have a guy who's hot, your team is winning, why are you going to take him out? So they're going to need some big plays from that offense, because I don't think defensively they are where they were at the beginning of the year. You know, they still have a chance. They have some talented players on that team, the greatest coach in CFL history. So they need to get it going fast, because they lose a couple of more games with the way the teams are playing in the West, and they'll be out of the playoff race.
Mike Riley's upset with the Edmonton Eskimos' three-game losing streak. I understand it. I understand because of the fashion they lost to Calgary. But with those injuries, I don't really expect them to win a lot of games. How do you, as a team in Edmonton, host Calgary this weekend without being frustrated over the injuries and all the losses that are piling up?
Well, if you start thinking about the injuries, you're being sidetracked. The injuries are part of the game. It's going to happen. You know, they weren't saying anything about the injuries when they were undefeated, you know, and they were having those injuries. So now you have to hope your GM can bring some players in. Because before, let's be honest, the players who were playing when the first set of injuries happened, those were Ed Hervey players. Those were his players. But now the second set of injuries, and now these are the new GM's players. So he needs to get some good players in there so they can get this back on track. Because if not, you know, they could slip out of the playoffs. Because the way they've lost these last, not that they've lost three games, it's the fashion in which they've lost them. The defense is playing bad. Mike Riley, he's been getting sacked, I think, in the last, two games. There's 9 turnovers. So it's the fashion in which they're losing these games. So they have to get back on track. They're starting to get some of the players back, but they have to find a way to win. Because the West, if you keep slipping, you know, those teams will pass you by, and next thing you know, you're out of the playoffs. So Mike Riley, as long as he's in control, you got to give them an opportunity to win the games. But they have to get some of those main players back and get back on track if they want to keep themselves going in the right direction.
Milt, had a lot of fun at your golf tournament along with Jimmy Janakis through premier events and with proceeds going to an anti-bullying campaign. Is it true that you were challenging people to push-up contests during your golf tournament?
Oh yeah, it's more than golf when you're golfing with Milt Stegall, because I don't think golf should just be golf. You know, it's golf fitness. So in between holes, we're getting our sprints in, getting some suicides, getting some push-ups in, getting some planks in. So my set of guys, they were drinking, but they were also exercising. So they were putting on 500 calories and taking off 600 at the same time. So
nice.
We had a good time. I'm looking forward to it next year. Out there for a worthy cause, and you know, getting some fitness in along with it, you can't beat that.
Milt's the one guy probably reminds me of if I was underage and I had a beer and he'd walk by me right now, even today, I'd probably just try and hide it and put it down and go, hey, Milt, how are you? I wasn't putting on any calories.
Underage, overage, at age, it really doesn't matter. I'm going to say something to you.
I'm still trying to get the picture out of my head of you trying to fake an injury because you've never been injured. I think it'd look comical. It'd look like a B-rated actor trying to pull something
just
off.
Lay down in the fetal position. That's all you do.
Yeah, I broke a fingernail. That's why I had to come out for 3 days. That was only time.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks for doing this. Enjoy the rest of your week.
I will. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Turtle Man. Take care. Can you imagine how excited the foursome would be? Man, we're golfing with Milt Stegall today. And by about the 15th hole, they're like, Milt Stegall doing all these push-ups. Pecs are all jacked up and stuff.
That's your second beer. I haven't seen you do any sit-ups.
Yeah.
You're putting on calories, man. Always great to have Milt on. And literally, like, if you've never been injured and your coach asks you to do this, how bad of an acting job would that be? Because you wouldn't even remember or know that.
Yeah.
Oh!
And they never ask the stars to go down. It's always the utility guy, the fullback or a lineman or whatever. Yeah.
What's the problem? I think I hurt my hamstring. Why are you grabbing your back? I don't know where my hammy is. It's always been good.
Well, you'd
thanks.
See that even with these guys Saskatchewan laugh, like the still shots of them laughing or smiling coming off, or the trainers out there talking and those laughing. But like Dunnigan and Stegall and everyone else who's been on the field has said, this is something that's been happening since the game began. You know, since guys first started playing at whatever level, it just wasn't utilized to the degree that you saw Chris Jones. And I disagree with Milt when he's saying, hey, now you can't make it 6 plays. There was a time that it was 0 plays. And then football, the NFL and the CFL are like, hey, man, we got to – some coaches are abusing this. We got to attach 3 plays. You got to sit out for this. If they've attached 3 plays to it, you can certainly attach 6 plays to it and then further remove the opportunity or the possibility that coaches might abuse it.
See, the problem with that is a reverse in my mind that say you legitimately cramp up. And then you're fine 2 plays later. Now you have to sit an additional 4. Like, the problem with this faking is the guys who actually do get a cramp and could come back sooner, but they have to sit just because other guys are faking. Like,
that cost is worth, to me, coaches abusing the rule in the manner in which we're seeing. And to me, if I'm Randy Ambrosi, I want to maintain the pot. I do not want to take away the excitement and drama that something like a hurry-up offense can provide our sport and entertain our fans with, because I got a coach or other coaches taking advantage of this rule. I'm going to put an end to that and allow the offense to flourish and sell tickets.
We'll qualify another person for our hockey nights in Vegas next, and more hockey talk at the bottom of the hour with Gus Katsaros. All that coming up on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Twelfth caller through right now at 780-1290 will be our second qualifier of the morning for our hockey nights in Vegas, as we're sending 5 lucky listeners and their guests to Sin City this November. You'll see the Golden Knights and the Jets for the first time ever at T-Mobile Arena on Friday, November the 10th. You'll get 2 hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Las Vegas, 4 nights accommodations right on the Strip, and $1,290 in cash to help you cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays on The Big Show at 7:15 a.m. and 8:15 a.m., then 12:15 p.m. with Kevin Olszewski on the Don Vito Roundtable, and 5:15 on the afternoon ride with Hustler and Mr. Rick Ralph. And watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show, September 11th, 25th, October 9th and 23rd, and November 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey nights in Vegas. Go all in with us here at TSN 1290, 12th caller through. And while we get our next qualifier, We should mention that the opening weekend game in the National Football League between the Miami Dolphins and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers has been postponed till November the 19th, Sunday, November the 19th. And that's the Dolphins coming off their game in England. So their bye week is now gone because of Hurricane Irma, which has touched down on land in the Caribbean right now and is heading towards Florida. Also, the Miami Hurricanes of the NCAA's game in Arkansas has been canceled due to traveling for the Miami Hurricanes. So obviously this is going to be devastating, and we wish everybody down there the safe and be the best. We saw what happened in Houston, and this is apparently worse, a hurricane coming into land there. So the NFL has moved that game.
Yeah, it looks to be horrible. I'm going to bounce back to Vegas here, though. And with the $1,290, the Jets play in Phoenix on Saturday. So you and I just it's a 5 hour and 20 minute drive. So you could, as one of your options when you're down in Vegas, catch the Golden Knights and the boys and then take a scenic drive down to Phoenix, rent a car, take the scenic drive, catch the Yotes, and then make your way back in Vegas in time to have a bunch more fun. There is an option.
Yeah, and that trip and tickets and drinks and all that sort of thing, you'll still have $1,250. So you're still good to go. You can catch the Coyotes game, drink your face
pick
out.
Up tickets for
and,
free.
And you're still totally good to go.
Drink your face off night at a Gold Eye, at a Coyotes game. Sorry, I said Gold Eyes. I pitched that once to Gold Eyes. It didn't go over very well. But however, I dare ask the question to steal a line from Troy. I dare ask, will there be tickets for that Coyotes game, though? It's always hard ticket to get in Glendale.
Now, you're just kind of emphasizing what Wicks is saying, that the tickets are going to be free. And you're
I'm riding his coattails there.
They're redoing the joke.
I'm riding his flow wave right off the back.
Jump on. Bring the surfboard. Jump on.
Who's our latest qualifier?
It's Jay Kachurka.
Jay Kachurka.
Jerky.
Did you say jerky? Or
jerky.
Jerky. Congratulations, Jay, just for qualifying. You get a Jets Gear gift card. We appreciate you listening to TSN 1290, and best of luck for the five grand prize draws you're now entered for September 11th, 25th, October 9th, and 23rd, and November 6th. Keep watching for online on our social medias for chances to qualify, and your next chance is at 12:15 on the Don Vito Roundtable today with Kevin Olszewski, Gus Katsaros, and the more hockey talk on The Big Show next on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090 with standard message rates applying. Every time you do, Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants will donate $1 to Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaelia, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki.
Oven butter chicken at Gold Dyes Games. Yes, please.
Do you know, I'm not a fan of East Indian food and butter chicken, but the one time I did actually kind of like it was I had some from Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants at a function like for somebody retiring. And I'm like, I don't really care for it, but I'm going to try. And it was actually very...
Brother,
but I'm not a fan of East Indian
friend
food.
I love East Indian food. A friend of Trey's, his name is Harshveer. His dad gave me some of his homemade butter chicken, and it was a religious experience. It was the best thing I've ever tasted in my life. And he's going to invite me over soon to just indulge, and I can't wait.
Well, if there's a couple spots open for the big show,
keep in mind, brother.
I'll clear my schedule.
I'll try and save some to bring for you at the very least.
I do have a buddy of mine who comes to town. He's a big fan of Indian food, and he always goes to Clay Oven when he visits. Thanks for them and their support there. More information on that Caring for Kids brought to you by TSN 1290 and Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants at tsn1290.ca. Going to tee up the Boss Pizza fan line in our next segment. Lots to talk about. about when we open the phone lines at 9 a.m., including some of the comments we've been running throughout the morning on Kevin Cheveldayoff's appearance on the NHL Network on Sirius XM and his thoughts on the Jets and some of the aspects of it. To keep the hockey talk going, we welcome back into the program our good friend from McKean'sHockey.com, Mr. Gus Katsaros. Good morning, Gus.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for joining us once again. And we've been delving into several of the topics around the Winnipeg Jets this morning. I mean, Steve Mason, Patrick Laine's expectations, Kulikov. And I guess we'll go there. What are your expectations for Patrick Laine in his sophomore season?
Well, under good circumstances and without any injury or health concerns, I would expect him to maybe probably score 40 goals, being that at least, if not leading, but at least being in the conversation for the Rocket Richard, and just showing the fans, I mean, it wasn't like his first year was something out of the blue. This is something that he's going to be consistently doing for the better part of his career. So I think that he'll be a prolific goal scorer in his second season.
Gus, please, the subject came up this morning, and it was something that I jumped on immediately and feel very strongly about, but please take as much time as you need to obliterate the notion as to why playing responsible defensive hockey, some people think it restricts your offensive output.
Well, I mean, in order to do that, you have to redefine what we consider defense, right? If considering defense is shots against or preventing shots against and preventing goals against, then it won't necessarily work for our purposes here. So the way that the game is played is we're focusing on possession, we're focusing on keeping the puck. Best form of defense is to have the puck, do things offensively, control the tempo, control the game. So defense is less about limiting shots or locations of shots and limiting goals and goals against. It's more about finding a method to retrieve the puck. So if a player is supposed to be better defensively, and we're using the more modern definition of what a defensive system and what a defensive element should be, then the technicality here is that the puck should actually be, or they should actually get more time with the puck rather than spending it defending or trying to defend a goal against or a shot against. So a better defensive player would actually have the puck more, or at least his teammates would have the puck if his team would have it, and they would be focused more on concentrating on generating offense. So the theory of sacrificing offense to play better defensively doesn't necessarily work in this more modern definition, simply because of the fact that you just need you need to be able to get the puck back, and that means if you're in the offensive zone, you're forechecking to get it back, you're playing defense to get the puck back. You're doing things, putting things in motion in order to retrieve that, and that should actually help you offensively. You do the same thing in the neutral zone. Now you just have to make sure to get a clean zone entry and then create offense. And in the defensive zone, you're looking to get the puck back and making clean, controlled zone exits. So I understand how it became a popular theory. You're sacrificing offensive production to be better defensively, but in today's modern theory, being better defensively means winning the puck back. Winning the puck back means you own more time with it, perhaps creating more offense out of it. So technically, you should actually get better offensive production by being better defensively.
So, Gus, whether it's systems, whether it's coaching, whether it's players buying in, whether it's players just developing more and getting better at it, how do the Jets do this? How do the Jets get better defensively overall? We were talking earlier this morning about maybe we don't even mind if some point totals go down if they just keep the puck out of the net more. What's the likelihood of them improving on that this season?
Well, I think that there's a distinct possibility that they can do that. I mean, last year started in a little bit of a different manner. Like, I mean, Jacob Trouba had issues. There was it just seems the things that were heading into the season last season aren't necessarily prevalent in this part, and they can focus more on the systematic things that they want to do better defensively as a team, as a unit, and try to capitalize on all of that. For instance, one thing I thought that the Jets didn't do very well is exactly that, get the puck back in opportune times. So they could be a little bit more aggressive in terms of doing something like that. They might try to implement a little bit more of a zone versus a man-on-man in the defensive zone to try to emulate that, and they need to be better in the neutral zone. So from my perspective, the way that the Jets can actually do get better is to control both blue lines, make better controlled zone exits, make better controlled zone entries, and keep more pressure in the offensive zone. In order to do that, they need to be able to figure out the method to be able to get the puck back. There's three components to a defensive system. It's the engage, the support with numbers, and then the transition. They're okay at the engage. The support element could be a little bit better, and then they're pretty decent with the transition. So in order for them to overall be a much better team defensively, they need to be able to support the people that support the players that are engaging the puck rushers on the opposition and do a better job at getting it back and moving back up the ice.
The McKean's 2017-18 Hockey Pool Yearbook, which is one of those must-have publications, is available. Gus, you contributed a bunch to it. When you look at the Central and remove Colorado from the equation, just like it's real hard to create separation with those teams as to where they're going to be situated come the end of the season, huh?
Oh, it was probably one of the more difficult divisions simply because I feel that the talent level is very similar. Chicago's gone down a little bit. Minnesota was a bit of an aberration as to where how high they were last year, but they're still a very good team. St. Louis, despite its rocky start, ended strong enough to give them credence to the degree that they might be a little bit better going in. Winnipeg has no more to go but up. So I think what ends up happening is smushing. All those teams have been smushed so close together in terms of where they probably will end up that the factor that separates some of the division leaders from the division, the bottom feeders, is how well they do against Colorado. You play them all well enough and you start winning those games, and that could be the main factor that will lead any of those teams into a division title.
Gus Katsaros from McKeenshockey.com joining us this morning on The Big Show, 41 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290. What are your thoughts on the Leafs? Regression, progression, about the same? Where do you see them going this year?
Well, as long as health isn't an issue, then I think that they become a high-end playoff bubble team. I think that they showed enough last year. There were circumstances that made the Leafs a playoff team last year. It's not like it was their performance alone. They're very healthy. They had very little in terms of how teams were able to play them simply because they didn't know what to expect from a lineup of rookies and a bunch of players that didn't really put it together in the past. And those things were exacerbated simply because of the fact of like Tampa Bay faltering and Florida faltering, even Boston faltering to a degree. So it pushed Toronto up a little bit to the point where they actually finally were able to nail a playoff spot. Personally, at this point, I think that they are contenders to make the playoffs. They are on a bubble. I would consider a bubble anywhere between 6th to 10th in the conference. So the middle is like right at that 8th level. The top-end contender is anywhere between 6 and 8. And then the bottom of the bubble is between, 8 and 10. So you're looking at the Leafs being somewhere in that 7, 8, 9 range. And, if a little bit of health that they were fortunate to have last year doesn't end up working out this season, they could easily just miss the playoffs.
Gus, 79 points last year for the Dallas Stars. How many do you see them getting this year?
They probably win that division outright, I think. I think that they did enough in the crease just to stabilize it. That crease was a disaster. It's been a disaster for the better part of two or three seasons. You have a little bit more experience on the blue line. The blue line might be a little bit of a weak spot, but I'm less concerned simply because of the bolstering that they got from the crease. They are potent up front. They will sting and sting and sting again. They added Radulov. I mean, that's a much bigger element than I think we're giving them credit for. Radulov was just a dynamic player in Montreal last year. He did so much on his own, and you add them as a peripheral to Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, and a declining Jason Spezza, plus with a few forwards that are coming up, I see Dallas being one of those division leaders at this point.
Interesting stuff indeed. How I know you don't do goalies, but you talked about Dallas, Ben Bishop and all that, and the defensive play, Ken Hitchcock and all that. What do you expect from Ben Bishop? Like, is it down year last year with the team in front of him? What? I mean, obviously you have him winning the division with the Stars. Going to have a good year?
Absolutely. I actually think that, you know, it's funny. I default to my goaltending stuff as being average. As long as you have average goaltending, coaching and player skill up front and on the blue line can make up for any deficiency. You start having less than average goaltending, and now it starts to get a little bit tougher. You're putting your team into situations where they have to dig themselves out of holes. They're playing from behind. You're not playing with a lead as much. It's a very different mindset to have a leaky goaltender and having to make up for the shortfall of what you're not getting in the crease, rather than getting just average or better than average in what I feel is probably going to be this situation with Ben Bishop. And they're playing in a different situation. You're not playing from behind. You're playing with more of a lead. You're playing with more confidence. You're giving your team the ability to win. We talk about goaltenders stealing wins. If an average goaltender does average things and they're able to maintain a consistency across the board, players know exactly what they're getting from the crease, and they'll be able to react as much. I don't expect Bishop to be a star. I just expect him to be average or a little bit better than average.
Great stuff as always, Gus. Thanks for doing this. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Pleasure's always mine. I love butter chicken, by the way.
Thanks so much, Gus. Take care, brother.
Am I in the minority there?
Oh, yeah.
Not a big butter chicken
fan. Oh, my
God.
I could bathe in butter chicken.
All right, then. Let's just carry a butter chicken bath. What do you think of that, Rewicki?
That is heaven.
Yeah, I'm down. Any kind of... Yeah,
you on one side of the bath and me on the other, Wicks.
Oh, I'll just be in my own, actually. It's sick. We don't need the same
bath. I'm just saying, give it a whirl. Envision it just for a moment.
I'm down. You get the cucumber eyes, right? I'm down with some kind of butter sauce bath.
Oh, look, down the hall. Here comes HR. Yeah. We'll take a break on the Big Show, tee up the Boss Pizza fan line, and we'll hear Kevin Cheveldayoff's thoughts on Mark Scheifele for this upcoming season next on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. It'll be wide open in 9 minutes. Top of the hour here on the Big Show, TSN 1290 with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Also, you can text your thoughts to 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. And just a follow-up, Kevin Gibson's doing this fine work for us. Following the Andrew Harris watch for 1,000 rush yards and 1,000 receiving yards after the Labor Day Classic, he is on pace now for this season to rush for 1,078 yards and to receive 1,012 yards, given the reception yardage he put up in the Labor Day Classic. The on pace is up to doing it, getting 1,000 in each as the season rolls on.
That's after 29 yards at Labor Day on the ground. Yeah. So that's good. I thought the what transpired over that game would have maybe stalled or lessened the likelihood, but still on pace. Awesome stuff.
Still on pace for the rushing game, and then, of course, the receptions that he had, or the receiving yards he had more of than rushing on.
At 72, yeah.
The Classic helped to bring that average up. So on pace to do it. The only other guy to come close, it was 97 with Robert Drummond. 1,134 rush yards, 840 receiving yards.
Andrew Harris was actually on pace to accomplish this in 2014 as a member of the Lions, but unfortunately was injured and got thrown off track here. So yeah, he's just another example. You're just seeing how strong and solid Andrew Harris is, and he's going to be absolutely fundamental in their game plan for the Bombers to pull out a victory on Saturday.
Your thoughts on Andrew Harris doing it, getting over 1,000 rush yards and 1,000 receiving yards. And if he does, is he your MOP, your most outstanding player in the CFL this year? 780-1290 on the Boss Pizza fan line. We're touched on the Labor Day Classic. Daron Carter saying he was spit on by a Bomber fan, and a Bomber fan caught on video and pictures of trying to take Gator the mascot's head off at the Labor Day Classic.
Yeah, you gather 30,000+ people, and there's alcohol involved, and some dumb things happen, right? Like it doesn't really matter where you're talking about that many people. You always have 1, 2, 3 incidents that are really unfortunate that seem to occur, but the vast majority of things that happen, and I got a bunch of messages and text and and people talk to me on Twitter about the remarkably positive experience that they got in Regina, how they were treated with kindness and respect, and by and large a real feel-good type of an event. And you know dang well that the vast majority of people that come here from Saskatchewan upcoming for the Banjo Bowl will be treated in the similar type of way. But maybe all we can do is do our darndest to minimize these things. You know, doing something to the mascot appears to be funny to maybe a caveman-type mentality, but there's a boy or a girl or like a young man or lady typically in those outfits. Just leave them alone and let them do their job in entertaining the crowd. And the spitting, of course, is completely unacceptable, but unfortunately happens. And, you know, we all need to be better.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the best you can do is limit it to one kind of minor incident, because look, you put five people with liquor in a room and something crazy is going down, you put 30,000 with a football game going on, you're gonna it happens, and you're talking about I guess two incidences over the course of a few hours with 30,000+ people there. But look, you get idiots in every crowd, every game, every sport. And maybe people listening have a different experience of the rivalry than I do, but I've felt for the most part that as far as rivalries go, the Bombers-Riders one is not tame, but it seems more sibling rivalry-esque.
Right? Yeah.
Your thoughts on the rivalry and the behavior of both sides' fans on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Kevin Cheveldayoff on the NHL Network on SiriusXM yesterday. Several comments we've ran throughout the day. You can comment on those, what he thought of Mason on Line A's second year, Dmitry Kulikov, young players trying to make this year's team. And here's his thoughts on Mark Scheifele.
Well, and I don't use the term lightly, he's a Steve Yzerman type of guy for us. Like, a genuine person, and as good of a hockey player as he is, he's even a better person. And you know, the excitement level that he has towards the game of hockey, the work ethic that he has towards his own personal betterment, it rubs off. It's infectious on the rest of the group of guys. So you know, if we can do great things, he's going to be at the center of it, and you know, it's going to be because of all the hard work and dedication that he's put into it.
Compared Mark Scheifele to Steve Yzerman for what he says Scheifele means to the organization.
That is awesome, isn't it? I mean, you just don't, when anytime you're compared to Steve Yzerman, that you don't get any higher praise than that. And I haven't spent a lot of time around Mark Scheifele, but I have spent some through some his kids sport events. And I got to say, when you're the way he conducts himself, the way he approaches his game, what you see on the ice, what he does in the community, he will eventually become the captain of this team. And I have to agree 100% with everything that Kevin Cheveldayoff says there.
34, 49, 61, and 82 is the
trajectory.
Improvement each year. And it's frightening to think that I'm not expecting 21 more points, but if that gets bumped up a little bit, that's a very interesting development moving forward.
Even if it's just 82 again. You average anything near a point a game, and that is serious. It's in the serious level.
That climb is a little better than 10 to 15% improvement every year, I believe, if my math serves me well. Your thoughts on those comments and anything else on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, and the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Jerron Carter, the Riders, said a Bomber fan spit on him. Another Bomber fanner viewed trying to rip Gator's head off. Your thoughts on the rivalry and how important it is to maybe keep it clean. I don't know if clean's the right word, but keep it civil, I guess, is a better word, between the Riders and the Bombers in the upcoming Banjo Bowl. Your thoughts on Carter going public with that knowledge. Ezekiel Elliott's suspension upheld. It looks like he will play week one, Sunday night versus the Giants, but then have to serve his six-game suspension. Your thoughts on that whole situation between the NFL and the Dallas Cowboys running back. Kevin Cheveldayoff on the NHL Network talking about Steve Mason, talking about Patrick Laine's second year, his expectations, Dmitry Kulikov, young players trying to make the team, and comparing Mark Scheifele to Steve Yzerman and what Scheifele means to the organization. Your impressions of those comments from Kevin Cheveldayoff as well. Anything and everything on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Your comments next. And we want to congratulate, by the way, our selfie promo that was going on all summer long. We have winners now. Selfie of the Summer, presented by Robertson College, won Del Panu $5,000. And the best animal selfie, presented by Assiniboine Park Zoo, went to Kristen Gozek, and that won her $1,000. So congratulations to all the winners, and TSN1290.ca has all the winners, the pictures, and everything else if you want to go check out who won our selfie contest throughout the summer.
Del Panu's shot is gorgeous. It's of a sunset and the lake. It is absolutely – all those pictures were really impressive. Del, your picture was gorgeous. Well done.
Yeah, excellent stuff, and we appreciate everybody taking part in that. And congratulations to all the winners, and congratulations to everyone who took selfies throughout the summer and sent them in to the contest, tsn1290.ca, for your thoughts on that. We also gave our AFC predictions for the National Football Association, if you want to weigh in on those and get your impressions or your predictions. What we didn't get into was we said our playoff teams. Who comes out? I actually have the Pittsburgh Steelers coming out this year over the New England Patriots.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's Pittsburgh's year. I don't know if they win the Super Bowl. I haven't decided that yet, but I think they go to the Super Bowl, and I think Big Ben hangs them up after this year, and Le'Veon Bell, that situation goes. He probably goes to free agency, all that stuff. But I just think that I think of that playoff game in New England, and I don't know. I don't – look, the Patriots are the Patriots. I'm not taking anything away from them. I think Edelman hurts. I don't know how the defense is going to be. I think it's Pittsburgh's year this year.
Ben Roethlisberger is a dog, and I have a lot of trouble staying objective. I just can't stand the guy. But his whole worse than Brett Favre retirement, oh, I might retire this. Shut up. Either retire or play. I hate the any athlete that does that. The old, I might retire, might come back, that whole thing, like, just zip it up and play, man. I have the Raiders taking out the Steelers.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
In the divisional game, the divisional matchup, and then New England over Kansas City with New England. I really want, at this point, I know some, like, the hate and the love, I suppose, of the Patriots grows as each, right, those two spheres or whatever sort of grow apart and get bigger as time marches forward, though. But to see Tom Brady go capture another Super Bowl, like to be witnessing history to that degree of the combination of Brady and Belichick, I would love to see that transpire again.
Jim kind of stole my thunder. I'm going to take the Steelers too to go to the Super Bowl.
Huh.
Their offense has absolutely no weakness whatsoever. And with Martavis Bryant back, I mean, as long as he stays clean, then their offense is absolutely terrifying. And I think their defense has made enough improvements. I think Ryan Shazier is going to be lights out at linebacker. And you know what? I don't think enough people are talking about the 40-year-old quarterback thing. And just the lack of success that every single quarterback outside of Brett Favre and maybe one other in history – where science. You see the performance dip dramatically.
Science and his diet will help him continue to play.
I think he'll be extremely good. I don't think he'll be as good as he was last year. And I think that's enough to get Pittsburgh over the top. But something I think people forget about, the Patriots own the Steelers. The Patriots in their last four games against Pittsburgh have won by, I think, a margin of close to 20 points. So people talked about the Colts and, oh, they can't get over the hump that is New England. Pittsburgh has been destroyed by the Patriots, and it'll be interesting to see if they can make up that gap this year.
It was interesting because with the trading of their third-string quarterback to Indianapolis, the New England Patriots, Mike and Mike, ESPN on TSN 1290, prior to our show starting at 6 a.m., I believe it was yesterday or the day before, we're talking about this, and Mike Golic went off on a rant because he said, these people who said this trade happened and Jimmy Garoppolo being an unrestricted free agent next season – he says, Tom Brady's still the best quarterback, but the gap is closing now, And he went off on a rant saying that's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, Brady had one of his best statistical seasons of his career last year. Did. How you say it's that close now is beyond him.
I agree.
But it will be interesting to see if he can keep pace and stay injury free and everything else that comes along with, you know, being 40 now. But I don't doubt it. I don't doubt him.
And what did he play? 14 games, right? No, yeah, sorry, 12 games.
Four, yeah.
Yeah, so 12 games, 28 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. What he did last year was remarkable. And the crazy thing was, at his age, he looked better than he did 5 years ago. Whatever he's doing, he looks until I see the early stages of a drop off. You could drive yourself mad waiting for the drop off in the end of Tom Brady. He may well just have a very similar year all over again.
To the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290 on the Big Show. Who's up first?
Let's get to Al.
Al, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Well, thank you. How are you?
I'm pretty good. A quick add-on to your mentioning of the heading down to Vegas for the Jets game. There's four of us going to head down on the Thursday, and that night the Seahawks are in town. So they're going to be taking on the Cardinals. What? So you can take in that game.
Wow.
Then on the Friday, you rent a car, drive to Vegas, go to the Jets Knights game, and then you hop back in that car on Saturday and go back to Phoenix and take in the Jets there against the Coyotes.
Goodness, what a trip that is, huh?
In the TSN 1290 golf tournament at Southwood, golf with a gentleman who I think has something planned along those lines where he's catching, I think it's the Thursday nighter, and then I think he's going to Jets Golden Knights, then I think he's getting Jets Coyotes, and then I think he's catching the Monday nighter somewhere and coming home. Just this epic sports week or couple of days. So,
and one more quick thing. I got to ask this because I don't know if anybody's asked Troy, but Troy, who do you cheer for in the NFL? I don't think I've ever heard of your favorite team.
Yeah, I'm kind of strange because for whatever reason, I don't even in the NHL, outside of the Jets or before the Jets came, a little bit of Rangers fans because Ulf and Anders went there, but I really don't have favorite teams. Like, there's teams I like a little more than others. As a kid, I was raised in a house that was Raiders big time and then some 49ers, but I really don't have a favorite team. I like players a lot.
I'm the same way, and I hate it.
I like players a lot, and I'll tend to cheer for players over teams. But, yeah, I just kind of like that. Outside of Winnipeg teams, I don't really have any favorite
teams. I have a friend
teams.
Like that. We'd go to NFL games, and for years he didn't have a favorite team, and he would always, we'd always bug him about it, and he'd always go, well, I mean, the Giants have night, you know. But, big, massive NFL fan, but didn't – and now he's on board with the Patriots. I think after the third and the fourth title and all that, he's a Patriots fan. But he was – for years didn't have a team.
Well, I think your Bears are going to be a lot better than a lot of people are thinking this year. For some reason, I think they're going to be a better team than they were last year, for sure. Huh. I'm a Vikings fan because of Bud Grant going down there. Ever since he went down there, I was a little kid back then. I've always been a Vikings fan. So,
yeah, I've never, and my dad, I don't know why, but he just hated the Minnesota Vikings. And he's passed away now, so I never asked him why, but I was raised to not like the Vikings, and that's worn away as years have gone by, but I'd like to ask him why, and it might have been related to Bud Grant. I don't know if he felt like the Bud Grant shafted the Bombers or what it was, but yeah, for some reason he was not a fan of the Vikings.
See, that's interesting, because even as a Bears fan, I detest the Green Bay Packers, but I like the Packers. Like, I get that as a football fan, that's dynamic to watch, and Aaron Rodgers, even
though
he's burnt
the Bears. Did
you just
say you detest the Packers, but you like them?
Well, I'm a Bears fan, so I guess I shouldn't say I appreciate them. Like, I appreciate watching Aaron Rodgers. I appreciate watching the Packers over the past couple of years, but I don't like them. Like, they're my rival, and I.
So when you go to an NFL party and your Bears are playing, you got a Bears jersey on and maybe some Packer
thong.
Briefs or something.
No, I would never don a Packers. And you know how I feel about spitting. I would never don anything Packers. In fact, there are weeks when the Bears and the Packers play. Sarah Orlesky and I pass each other, don't even say hello. Keep it moving, Orlesky. But it's interesting how you find your team and who you cheer for. What do you guys thanks, Al, for the call on the Boston Pizza
fan line.
We'll
get to John in just a second.
We'll get to John in just a second. How good/bad do you think the Bears will be this year?
Well, because you're here, I hope they're horrible. but I've always had, like, since, say, like, with Walter Payton, for me, they're a team that I've always kind of loved. And just the whole, like, I walked, and when I went was in college in South Dakota, had a buddy that lived in Chicago and went and walked on Soldier Field, right? And remember the 85 Bears and that defense. So there's always a soft spot in my heart. And a couple of my uncles are huge Bears fans with Walter Payton and such. So always a soft spot. But I don't know, around 5 wins, I got them pegged at.
Yeah, I was going to say 4-12. 4-12, and I think they'll be better than people think, but like competitive,
first,
but not.
I know that none of their first 6 opponents finished below 500. So
their
they
schedule
got a tough start
is,
out of the
for
game.
A non-playoff yeah. team is atrocious. But I do. I think a lot of people have them at winning 2-3 games. I actually think they'll win 4-5, maybe 6. So I think they are. I think, Al, you're right. They're going to be better than people say, but I don't think they're going to be that much better. Back to Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. John, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Morning, guys. This has to do with the CFL with that delay of game kind of issue with the hurry-up offense.
Yeah.
What do you think of this idea? It's kind of like in the hockey rules. If the offense, only the offensive player, like unless there's an injury to an offensive player, once the referee has placed the ball down at the line of scrimmage and the center's lined up over it already, no defensive player can go out with an injury.
But
like in hockey, when the player is hurt,
that's
if the possession
tough, though,
team
man.
Has it, they have to go unless to the referee's discretion, the guy is concussed. But that would have happened at the end of the play. The guy would have showed the injuries. But as soon as the ball is placed, no player on the defensive team can go down. And if he does, he runs the risk of playing one man short until the end of that play.
That's a real tough thing, though, man. And you know, like, no change is ever going to take away from player safety, right? So if you got a player who legit cramps up and drops on the D line, and there's no way in the world, any league in the world, is just going to allow the play to go on when you got a player writhing in pain from a cramp on the ground. So that, like, it'll never go in that direction. As far as player safety is always going to be emphasized,
I believe. Interesting. Okay. Good. Thank you very much. Okay,
yeah, thanks for the call, John. You know, we've tossed this around, and I heard Rick and Huss on the afternoon ride talk about it. Kevin Olszewski. Kevin Olszewski pulled up lame at the start of his show yesterday, and Remus had to come through, and then it turned out he was faking. He was okay, and he continued on with the whole show. But all the ideas and the thought process and everything around this thing goes into it, and I can't come to a solution that makes this go away. I just think it's...
6 plays makes it go away. And I don't know what the hell's so hard to wrap your mind, anybody's mind around that. There used to be, there were no plays you have to sit out. And coaches use this as a tactic. So 3 plays were put into place. If 3 plays isn't getting it done, maybe 6 plays. And if I'm Randy Ambrosi, I am putting something in effect because offense sells our game. Offense sells tickets. Offense is what the vast majority, 90% of the fans want to see. And I'm going to protect this type of a coaching move.
Now, what about this scenario or a scenario similar to it? And let's say Andrew Harris takes a hit to the thigh and gets a bit of a Charlie horse or something like that, right? And
yeah.
He goes to he's on the field and he gets taken off and, you yeah. know, just, you know, eventually walks it off and he's ready to go in a play or two.
Yeah.
Where there's,
That's
you know, a legitimate injury.
Too bad. You got to sit out sick. It's not how much more of a stretch is it than you, sorry, I have a member on the sidelines. The guy's ready to go. You got to sit out 3 plays. That's just it's accepted. That's the way it is.
Well,
six plays is
3 possessions potentially have your star running back out for no legitimate reason other than the fact he got banged up.
And I think though that is worth stopping what Chris Jones did last week and is going to do again this week and will continue to do. And other coaches, don't think for a second that other coaches aren't going to start to copy what he's doing.
The also thought process of that, though, is if you dress 8 D linemen like Jones has, 3 of those he has no intention of using. So, like, I don't think that even
does
sitting
it, does
out
it curb
6
the
plays
still, yeah.
curve it. I don't – like, if you got a guy that you just dressing and you have no intention of playing him anyways and you put him out there for the purpose to go down, you don't care if it's 3 plays or 6.
Well,
you're not
going
to put him back in anyway.
If you got no intention to use him, he's out there on the field. So you're using him.
Well, you're using him to do this. I don't think it – like, I mean, my point is – The counter to the 6 plays is just you just put a player out there you probably weren't going to use for 12 plays.
Well, nonetheless, to me, it's the best way that affects the game the very least, and it helps to maintain a level of integrity to simply increase the number of plays missed.
Thanks for the call, John. We'll get to more of your calls and your texts. 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. And, of course, 780-1290 to weigh in on this and anything else. We did get a tweet about the Shifley thing where Kevin Cheveldayoff did call him this organization, Steve Yzerman. Nick says on Twitter, Shifley's favorite player, Stevie Y. I knew that. He's talked about how he wants to emulate his career, hashtag franchise player. Your thoughts on that and everything else on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 next on The Big Show.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, your calls, your thoughts on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, and also 1290-90 on text with standard message rates applying. The butter chicken bath is, it always amazes me what catches some momentum. And the butter chicken bath Troy Westwood was proposing with Brandon Ruwicki is catching some steam. Ezra Ginsberg likes it, says, I love driving to work listening to Troy Westwood talk about bathing in butter chicken.
Come on in, Ezzy. The butter chicken sauce is warm, brother. You're welcome in here. There's enough room for you, man.
Dip your toe in the water, so to speak.
Yeah. Bring it all in. Take it all off. Bring it all in, brother.
I just want my own bath.
I want to take a shower right now just listening to this.
You throw this into a hot tub. Get out of the bath. Let's go hot tubbing in butter chicken.
By the way, Ezra Ginsberg.
Seven or eight of us in there.
Is a kept man now. He got married. Congratulations.
Hey, those fellas that I see, that legal curb men, they dropping like flies.
First Michael Remus, now Ezra Ginsberg. I had the lovely opportunity a couple months ago of meeting Ezra's new bride, and he is a lucky guy. Did well.
As is Michael Remus. I don't know. Yeah,
Remus. I met her too,
hockey knowledge and sports knowledge. I don't know if that's what's got the ladies all bent out of shape, but whatever they're selling is working.
Don't get me wrong. After I met both beauties, I did think to myself, really? These guys got these two did this well?
Sometimes
no offense, gentlemen,
don't add up.
But
you gotta think outside the box.
That's
a little
right.
Bit.
You gotta
see how,
like in the world of sports, yeah. Some things just don't add up. But congratulations,
you gotta go to the analytics of things.
Ezzy and your bride, congratulations. We wish you all the best, and it's outstanding stuff. Good stuff. Good stuff there on the Big Show.
Can we talk about Bryce Harper's hair?
It's a lot like yours.
Somewhat resembles yours, yeah.
Well, it did. Have you guys not seen the new do?
I don't believe so.
First of all, I just want to say this. I saw this coming. When baseball players get injured, they have way too much time on their hands.
Apparently. Troy's going to Google it here. Yeah. I want to see your reaction when you see it for the first time.
Okay.
It is.
We're talking
it is
about
the
drapes, right?
It is the. I hope. I'm not. No, never mind. It is the worst hair in sports this year.
Bryce Harper hair pops up right away.
It is the worst hair in sports this year.
It's cornrows, not even close. Is it not?
He got cornrows.
I dig cornrows, but it's really weird seeing him in cornrows.
You dig cornrows?
Well, yeah, heck yeah. I mean, as you know, when you see cats out there in cornrows, it seems to suit some and not suit others. It just looks really weird seeing Bryce Harper in cornrows.
Let's get to the Boss Pizza fan line as fast as we can. 780-1290.
Neil,
go ahead, sir.
All right, there are CRTC restrictions about this butter chicken.
There are CRTC restrictions and just general laws and regulations, I think.
You could be taken off the air for this discussion. I almost drove into a curb over that.
It's probably going to happen one way or the other. I just never thought it'd be butter chicken.
Yep. I was on holiday, so I didn't hear any of your discussion about the Hendricks, what's his name?
Matt Hendricks
being brought in. I mean, I think it could be one of the bigger moves the Jets make simply because it's obviously one of the screaming needs of the team. But my question is, like, who's coming out?
You're talking the screaming need being at the faceoff dot?
No, a penalty killing. He's a penalty killing specialist. So.
Well, this is the question, though. He only averaged a minute 30 last year. Does that mean he's good?
Sorry, Neil, anything else? Because we have to take a break, and we'll touch on this for you when we come back. Is that just all you wanted to know about Matt Hendricks?
Yeah, I just wanted to hear about that and who's coming out if he comes in.
Super. We'll do that when we come back. Thanks for calling, Neil. We appreciate it. And we'll get to that when we return on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you. 32 minutes past the hour and the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Before we get to our next call, Neil was asking about Matt Hendricks and who is coming out of the lineup. My thoughts were on that, and we actually had Matt Hendricks on TSN 1290. He was on the afternoon ride, Neil. And he was talking a lot about what Paul Maurice had told him and the expectations, and a lot of it was to do with leadership and stuff like that. I don't see him playing a lot. So as who's coming out of the lineup, I'm not sure. I think it might be one of the younger guys throughout the year if it happens to sort of or maybe older guy that sends a message here and there. But I think he's sort of a depth forward. I think he might spend some time with the Moose, and I think a lot of what he was talking about, I think, is leadership. And when I say leadership, I think it's just that different voice. From what I've been told about Matt Hendricks is he's going to come in, and he's not afraid to get in anybody's face and say anything that needs to be done. And I think that's maybe just a different voice from the guys like Shifley and Bufflin and Wheeler who know everybody in the room. It's that sort of unbiased outside voice that's coming in. But as for whom comes out and who he plays, I don't know how much he's in the lineup and for whom specifically, because I just think if the team's healthy and playing well, I don't see him in the lineup.
Sure sounds like when he was talking, though, that he's thinking he's planning on being in the starting lineup, and even other guys referencing him. It just is kind of strange to when you hear Matt Hendricks' name and you think about what the Jets already have here, and you think on opening night, I'm going to be really surprised if he cracks. Something's like really surprised or worse if he cracks the opening lineup. It would just seem to everything he was saying, and it seemed to lean you towards, gee whiz, it sounds like he's planning on being out there, expecting to be out there. I'll be shocked and disappointed if he is, whoever he might bump out. I just, this whole notion that he's some sort of a penalty-killing specialist that operates at a high level, I don't see that anymore. At 36 years old, and there's really, you know, what stands out the most in a positive manner, I think, would be his a guy you can send out in the defensive zone when you need a face-off to be one sort of thing. I think that might be the strongest thing that he brings to the table, but I hope that he's here simply as a depth piece.
Yeah, and I think outrage might be more apropos than shocked. If Matt Hendricks beats out someone like Andrew Copp for that fourth line center role, yeah. I mean, Copp is just it's not a comparison as to who's a more productive NHL player at this point in their career. But you know, Chevy last year signed Brian Strait to a 1 year, $600,000 one-way deal at the end of August. And he was a guy that saw no NHL time until there was about six or seven injuries on the team's blue line. I think it's the exact same kind of scenario here where Matt Hendricks, yeah, he's got the 1 year one way, but to me, it's more of a, you know, kind of signing a veteran guy and really has a one way ticket to the Moose for this season. I would be surprised if he played honestly more than 10 games this year.
But would you agree that when he spoke, it sure didn't sound like that's what he thought was going to happen?
Which he should, right?
Yeah, but that's like Michael Hutchinson thinks he's going to be on the Jets this year. Those guys come in and think to do.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he does.
Guys are smart enough to understand situations at hand. I do not believe Michael Hutchinson believes he's going to be with the Jets this year.
You think Michael Hutchinson's coming into camp saying, no matter what I do or how well I perform, I don't have a spot on this team? You think that's how he's preparing for camp?
Not preparing, but I do believe that athletes are smart enough to understand situations at hand. Michael Hutchinson is not coming to camp thinking that he might be hopeful of it. He's not thinking that he's going to be playing with the Jets to opening night.
I will say this about Matt Hendricks. If he does get in the lineup, I'm not going to be outraged. It just depends
on what. Opening night?
Well, that depends on camp. I mean, if Matt Hendricks comes in and busts his ass and is shows up for training camp day in, day out, and somebody like the younger players doesn't or isn't very good defensively in a couple exhibition games, I don't have a problem with a veteran like that on opening night for maybe a game or two. Like, if we're saying he's going to play 30, maybe 40 games at the most...
You're saying that.
I don't care if it's one game at the start of the year of those.
He's been absolutely pummeled in terms of shot differentials. Yep. Over his... Never mind last year. Over his career. He's just... He just doesn't bring impact to an NHL roster, positively.
And talk Thorburn... Think Thorburn, Tanev, possession numbers.
But don't you think, whether he's in the lineup or not... whether it's on opening night or in game 30, is up to the other guys on the team? Like, don't you think that's up to Nick Petan and Mark Dano and those guys?
JT, but sometimes there's preconceived notions. The same way of hearing that Marco Dano's got to work his way back into the lineup when you've got Thorburn and Tanev out there. That was like, pardon? Excuse me?
Well, yeah, but I think we're missing a big thing here when we talk about Petan being a healthy scratch and Dano being a healthy scratch. A lot of that is on them. A lot of that is for them to prove and to show up at practice and everything else and earn the spot in the lineup. Now, I'm not saying they need more of a chance or anything like that, but let's be honest here. You have to earn that. You have to be good in practice. You have to be good in preseason. You have to be good night in, night out. You have to be consistent.
Yep. And even with that, it was hard to... Without knowing the details, you don't know the details, I don't know the details. From what we saw, it was an interesting statement or strange statement for Coach to say that he had to work his way, win his way back into the lineup when he got Tanev and Thorburn out there at their .07, .09 points averaged per night.
Back to Boss Pizza Fan Line. We've got some people waiting, 780-1290. Who's next?
Yeah, we'll get Mike and Norm to hang on, but let's go to John.
John, you're on the big show. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I wanted to touch on something else, but I was just listening to your conversation, and if we have a healthy Petan and a healthy Dano, riding pine this year in favor of a guy like Hendricks or Tanev, there's just no excuse for that, period. We need to get a lot more creative and a lot more imaginative with the fourth line, because those are fourth line guys, let's be honest, if it's a healthy roster. And I can't tolerate seeing that sort of nonsense again. And to carry forward to what I wanted to call in about, it's an unfair question, but I'll put it to you anyway. If the Jets have 20 points after 20 games, 30 after 30, 40 after 40, what's the over-under here? How long are we going to ride out Paul Maurice on this year's deal? Because to me, if we're sitting 20 after 20, 40 after 40, I can't be carrying on after the All-Star break. Personally, because that just speaks to the fact that, and this is with a healthy roster, barring any injuries to Mason or to key guys, if we have a healthy roster for the most part and we're at 40 points after 40 games, I just can't see us carrying on with Maurice. And maybe I'll ask for your guys' thoughts on that. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call, John.
I think it really depends. Like, basically, you're talking 500 there, right? And I think it really depends on the makeup of the Central at that point in time, like how much cannibalization there's going to be within the Central with those top six teams discounting Colorado. But I think if they're sniffing around 500 at, say, the 20-game mark, I'm not sure where you're going to be situated in the Central with that, maybe in like somewhere in the 4-5-6 range. And I don't think that's a disastrous start after 20 games.
Does it matter to you guys in the fashion in which they say they don't? Say it's like John's asking, what if they just aren't there? They're in the bottom of the division after 2 months, but playing well, numbers are well, defensive is better, everything's better, but it's just not
which
resulting
there. Which I think can
there.
Happen. That's what I'm kind of thinking.
Yeah.
Is gonna happen this year.
Does it matter in the fashion in which this could happen?
To me, I would go more so how realistically close are you to the playoff line? And if you're, say, 6 or 8 points back halfway through the season, that's not good enough. But if you're in fifth spot in the division, but you're at the playoff line or just a point or two back, then that's not too bad. But I just think there's got to be higher expectations. This team, there's no reason this team shouldn't be much more improved in basically every area of the ice. There really isn't.
And but if that's not the case, they can be, but still outside the playoff line?
No, I don't. Because I think if they improve in those areas, I think they make the playoffs. If they don't get past that playoff line, it's because one area did not reach, really, I think, just kind of the bare minimum of expectations.
I don't think you can say that, though, Wicks, without taking into consideration that you've got Dallas high or winning the
Central.
I have
them winning it.
And like a fair amount of, so the remarkable improvement by Dallas. You got Nashville being that, like, there's going to be a couple of teams here in the Central that are pretty good teams that miss the playoffs. And I think the Jets can improve quite dramatically and still lose that war to get above the playoff line there, man.
I just disagree. I just think that if they get...
Do you think St. Louis will be...
I think St. Louis is going to fall, but I just don't think they're as good as the other teams.
But what if they are, though?
Oh, God help us all. I don't think there's a whole lot of separation between the top five teams in the division. I really don't. Like, I don't think there's, talent-wise, there's a whole lot missing there. But I just feel like if the Jets replicate, say they finish seventh in goals for this year, as they did last year, and you improve, if they improve the save percentage, the penalty kill a little bit, and the power play a little bit, that's enough. It's a lot, but that's what I'm saying. If they take care of their business, I don't even worry about what the other teams in the division do.
That's a lot of improvement, man.
I think, as I said this before, I don't see how Chicago is as good as they were.
You picked them outside the playoffs. Famous.
Yeah.
I don't have them
in the playoffs, and I think St. Louis is the other one, and I don't...
You picked Minnie, too, didn't you? Minnie and Chicago.
Well, Minnie, I think, is going to regress. I was shocked to see they led the league in scoring or the division, and I saw a lot of that came in the first half of the season. I'm not saying that they miss the playoffs. I just think they regress a bit. But if I have to today pick two, I think it's Chicago and St. Louis.
Yeah,
and if you look at the Jets' record within the division,
it's not bad.
That's really like they have to win, as you pointed out yesterday, those Colorado games they lose and those Phoenix games they lose or Arizona games they lose. I get that. But against the division last year, they were very good. And if you can take care of your own division and get some consistency in your game against those other ones, I don't see how they don't get in.
The Jets 19-8-2 within the Central, and they won the last seven games of the season, and they finish in fifth with 87 points. And you said they just need to improve their team defense, their power play, their penalty kill, and their goaltending.
That's it. That's it. That's
yeah.
it. Just those five out of the six areas of hockey. That's it.
That's a lot of stuff, brother.
Thanks for the call, John. We appreciate it. Mike, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hello.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, guys. Long time, first time.
Hey, thanks for that. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for taking the time, my man.
I just wanted to ask if you guys can think of a case in recent memory where both the GM and the coach of an NHL team are heading into the final contract or final season of their contracts.
Well, I can't off the top of my head. But it's not something I track either. Pardon me?
Isn't that the case with the Jets, and isn't that kind of peculiar?
Well, Chevy is it 2 years, or are they both up at the same time?
We'll double-check that, but I believe they're both up right now.
Yeah. This is interesting because I've been following this story, and I haven't gone public with it yet because I'm waiting for a second confirmation, but I've heard they each have extensions. And how long they are, what they are, I don't know. So,
but you're not going to share that until
you get more. I shouldn't even probably be saying it right now, but I expect around training camp for an announcement.
And yeah, Chevy's contract, it's both Chevy Maurice this year.
Yeah.
So why not announce it?
It's a great question.
I'll go all the way back to Claude Noel's extension, and I heard that was done for a couple of weeks, and they just wait for the draft to happen. And they go into the draft. Like, the Jets are historic. They like to not have a lot of press conferences. So I think that come training camp, that they'll be announced. And then when they meet the media for the start of training camp, they'll sort of kill two birds with one stone. That's my gut feeling on it.
So that suggests that maybe they're not as that they're not in the hot seat as much as
I don't think Chevy's in a hot seat at all.
No, I don't think Chevy's in the hot seat. I think Paul Maurice is even with an extension. I don't I don't think whatever his extension in for how many years, again, should he actually have one, I think that if things don't go well, it's like I think people, like let's be honest, in the world of sports, there's guys with 3 years. Look at how Tortorella got gassed. He had 3 years left at $5 million per, did he not? Or
with Vancouver, it was after the, just 1 year.
So I if things don't go well, they don't go well.
I agree, but I just don't see the need to hand that extension unless things improve. You know what I mean? Like I don't buy the lame duck coach. I don't buy the team being lost or the room being lost. I just don't see the harm in letting things play out and making your move after that. Like, why sink money into something that unless you have full confidence and you're saying he's our guy next year, 2 years from now, that's the end of discussion.
Having said that, it ain't our money. It doesn't apply to the cap. It doesn't much matter. And if they feel they need, there's no way in the world that Thompson and Chipman, if they feel they need to do something, they'll eat that money and do something.
But you can also say, like right now, he's our guy. I have full confidence that at the start of this year, the first 30 games, the defense will improve this.
That's what
and when they
says,
don't,
right?
You can go 3 months later that, you know, at the time, I thought he was our guy. That's why I got the extension. It didn't work out.
That's what the sports world does.
Yeah. Right
there. Everybody does that.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Norm, you're up next. If you can hang on, we'll go to you next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. And Norm, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good, thanks. You?
I'm doing very good. Awesome day outside today. I was going to say two things. One thing about the Bombers and one thing about the Jets. About the Bombers, I think they have to pummel their quarterback in Saskatchewan there early in the game because I've watched a lot of football. I noticed that when he gets hit early, he doesn't play as good. He's like probably 20-25% as efficient as what he usually is, and he's red hot right now.
They couldn't get to him, man. They blitzed him over 50% of the plays. They blitzed Kevin Glenn in the first half and couldn't get to him.
And that is totally amazing, isn't it?
It is, man. So, you know, maybe your blitzes are too simple. You need a more exotic sort of blitz package. But I agree with you. That is absolutely essential. They cannot let him be comfortable back there.
All right. About the Jets, I was going to say, too, like, I don't know if any other team in the league does this or not. But, quite a few announcers, they say that Winnipeg probably wouldn't make the playoffs if they could clean up their penalties and stuff like that. Do you think it would be advisable to maybe hire a recent retired referee or something like that to help the players and the teams just to clean it up a little bit more so that they would have a better, maybe their knowledge of what penalties are and stuff aren't as clear as what they think they are.
Oh, the boys know, man. Boys know, no question about it. And I thought Matt Hendricks, interesting he was bringing that up. He took 12 minors in 40 or so games played last year. The you know, a guy like Dustin Byfuglien, 40 minor penalties last year, a long way in front of anybody else out there. They just need to clean it up, man. And interestingly, I don't put so much emphasis on this, they need less minor penalties. You look, Anaheim and Calgary had more minor penalties than the Jets, and look at the level of success that they enjoyed. Ultimately, it comes down to killing the penalties that you take. You want to be smarter, but that penalty kill needs to get better.
Or you do one or the other. Like, you don't take as many penalties, or you get good at killing them off. Like pick one. When you're bad and you take too many, you get what happened last year, and you see some of the poor defensive numbers really, really get kind of highlighted there. But there's no doubt. Players know the penalties. They know what to do. Part of it, too, might just be being better defensively. When are penalties generally taken? Inside the defensive zone because you're out of position, right? So if the Jets can improve in that regard, you'll see the penalty at least minutes go down. I don't know about the penalty kill just yet.
And Blake Wheeler talked about that even in his interview with Matt Larkin of the Hockey News. And Paul Maurice always says that, you know, I don't mind physical penalties. I don't mind this kind of stuff. What I hate is the stick infractions. And I think Blake Wheeler touched on that too. He goes, that's usually a guy being half a second too late or not in the proper position. So I think they're well aware of it. I don't think they need an expert. And, like, this is the thing, too. Like, we all talk about this, and if we're all talking about it, I don't think the Maurices and the Charlie Huddies of the world and the players are sitting there unaware of it. Like, I think that everything we've heard this offseason is defensive zone, penalties, all have to get better. I'm just really interested in if they can actually – you know, get better at it and follow through on what they all acknowledge is their deficiencies.
All those points were relevant last year, and how many of them were changed or made better? None of them.
So you think they can't?
I'm saying that people are putting a lot of faith in pixie dust solving an issue that has been prevalent for a while with special teams and team defense.
I don't think it's pixie dust. I think it's like this is the stuff you work on in training camp in the off season. I think in the season with lack of practice time and everything else, it's you can say this and say that. It's something that has to sort of be the general focus. I mean, what else were they focusing on last year?
I'm just saying, Jim, that these problems that are being identified and we as fans are pointing out, this has been prevalent. The only time it improved was upon arrival of Paul Maurice. It's been a problem since then, and I just – why would we think all of a sudden all these things are going to get better dramatically?
And a valid point. Our province is packed with shiny stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who's dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them soon. And go to our TSN 1290 Facebook page online. We're going to be qualifying more people very soon, right after the show on Hockey Nights in Vegas. We appreciate you listening. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. to do it all over again on The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.